Welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Tuesday, September 4th, 2018. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani back inside our New York City studio. I hope you didn't miss me too much yesterday. We were off Labor Day here in the United States, Canada, some other places as well. I know not everyone celebrates Labor Day, but we do here, so we were off. But as we typically do, no show Monday, we come back on a Tuesday. So today, Tuesday feels like Monday. Wouldn't leave you hanging as we approach UFC 228. That is this weekend in Dallas, Texas. I'll be heading out on Thursday, so look out for that coverage. But there is much to discuss, my friends, on this episode of the Helwani Show. Now, I will also say right off the top, I must give a huge thank you. I must say thank you so much to the great Lenny Hart, who I lost my music there. But in any event, this makes it a little more dramatic. Thank you very much to Lenny Hart for giving us that new intro. I missed having her at the top of the show. I missed having her a part of the show. And she was oh so kind to deliver that for us, recorded for us. From the kindness of her heart. I really appreciate that. And she's a legend. She's a living legend. If you don't know who Lenny Hart is, she is the voice of pride. And she still is a part of the MMA world. Of course, she does stuff for Ryzen. She's done some Bellator. I do believe she's also done some ONE, but I wanted to have her a part of the show because back in the day, we used to have her say my name. That, of course, came from an interview that we did many moons ago in the AOL days. We just took it and spliced it in there. Now she actually made us an intro. And so I think that that is a massive upgrade. So thank you very much, Lenny Hart. Thank you to Malcolm as well, who helped set it all up. I really appreciate it, and it is an honor to have you a part of this program. So today on the show, we are talking, of course, 228 and other fine things. I'll run down the lineup, and then I'll get to our first guest of the day. Ally Quinto will join us at 345 from Dallas. He is there to corner his good friend Aljamain Sterling, so I look forward to catching up with Rage and Al. 325, we'll talk to Sage Northcutt. And I know a lot of you are thinking that we're going to talk about the Logan Paul stuff, and we might talk about it. But we're also going to talk about the fact that he is on the road to becoming a free agent. And this is a very interesting time for young Sage Northcutt. So I look forward to having him on the program at 325. 305, we'll talk to Kamaru Usman. You'll recall last week on the show, Tyron Woodley said if Darren Till misses weight on Friday, he is not fighting backup fighter Kamaru Usman. He's either going to fight Darren Till or not fight at all. He didn't really say enough. It was more, I'm just going to fight the guy who's overweight, and I'm not going to fight Usman because I'm not a guy who's just going to fight someone on 24 hours notice. And so I'm curious to get Usman's take on all this because he's going to Dallas. He's cutting weight. He's the backup guy, but perhaps they didn't tell Woodley that. I want to get Usman's thoughts on it all. Uriah Faber is going to join us at 2:45, and he has an announcement to make, and it's about UFC 229 weekend, so stay tuned for that. I'm looking forward to having him on. Trevor Whitman will be on at 2:25, one of the very best coaches in the game, and he's coming off the win for Justin Gaethje. Mike Perry at 1:45, talk about all the drama with Donald Cerrone and Jackson Wink, and then James Vick in his first interview since losing to Justin Gaethje will join us at 1:25. But first, it is an absolute honor to have the living legend on the program. He's been on once before. There's a lot going on in his life. There's a lot going on with Golden Boy these days as far as boxing and MMA is concerned. I've been trying to get him on the program for quite some time. Very excited to say hello to Oscar De La Hoya, the Golden Boy himself. Oscar, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to talk to you once again, Oscar. Thank you for doing this. And I know we are on the road to Triple G Canelo. That is coming up in less than 2 weeks. But we are an MMA show, Oscar, and you are a hot topic in this sport. So if you don't mind, I'd love to start there. Why are you getting into the MMA world, Oscar?
For the same reason that I got myself into boxing, and that's to make sure, obviously, that the fighters are treated fairly, to making sure that they have an outlet to make as much money as possible, and to obviously find the next superstars in the sport. And you know, part of the reason as well, and probably the primary reason, is because I actually love watching MMA, and obviously I love boxing.
when did you first decide that this was something that you wanted to get involved in from a business standpoint? When did this idea first come about?
Well, it first came about a couple of years ago. But most recently, I've been having MMA fighters approach me left and right, or write me and telling me that that MMA fighters don't get paid enough. Whether it's a championship caliber fighter or whether it's a fighter who has one or two fights, it makes me sick to my stomach that main event fighters who are under no obligation with anybody come up to me and tell me that they're getting paid peanuts. So I think I can come in and make a difference. I think with my formula that I implemented with Golden Boy Promotions right from the start, I think I can change the way fighters are compensated.
You say you have a formula. For those that don't know, what is that formula, and how do you bring that over to this sport?
pay them more money.
Okay.
Easy as that.
That sounds pretty good. I'm sure a lot of fighters would be on board. November 24th, Inglewood, California, the Forum. That's the debut event, correct?
Correct. That's our debut event at the Forum. And look, we have arguably the two biggest names in MMA. These are the pioneers. They started with the UFC, and they've had two incredible fights together. Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz will once again clash horns and give the fight fans their money's worth. So, but the fact that I'm including them in all revenue shares makes a huge difference. Tito Ortiz and Chuck Liddell deserve it. They're legends. They deserve to be treated the right way.
Could you tell us how much they're going to make? How much they stand to make on this fight?
Well, all I can say is that they're going to make the most money they've ever made in their careers, and I know that for a fact. The fact that we're including them in all revenue shares is a big game changer for both guys. And this fight was relatively easy to make because we do include them in all revenues that are coming in to the pot. So and look, I mean, What fighter in the UFC can say that? I mean, other than maybe Conor McGregor that's fighting in October.
Okay, what percentage of the revenue are they getting? Obviously, they're not getting 100%. Is it a 50-50 split?
Well, I can't really disclose any type of information like that, but let's just say that both guys are going to be compensated very well.
Are they the main event?
They are the main event, and let me tell you one thing, the way we do it with Golden Boy Promotions in boxing, I'm going to stack this card from top to bottom. This is a sport that I'm getting familiar with. I do have to say that in the beginning, I did criticize MMA, and the truth of the matter is because I did feel threatened. The fact that MMA has grown so much, the fact that the UFC has like taken over basically, I felt a little threatened. So it was my mistake and my part to attack the MMA world. But let me tell you one thing: I respect it like there's no tomorrow. These fighters fight their heart off. These fighters are in there risking their lives, and I strongly feel that they deserve the best compensation that they can get hold of.
The card on November 24th, Oscar, will that be an all MMA card?
It will be an all MMA card from top to bottom. I plan on including an amateur tournament where I can hopefully attract the best amateurs in MMA and include them. But I wanna put a card together that people are gonna be very proud of.
Do you know if they'll be competing in a ring or a cage?
It'll be a cage, just exactly how the UFC puts together their events. That's exactly what we're gonna do. We're gonna give the fight fans the best fights in the cage. This is just like the UFC does, we're going to do the same thing.
And will it be pay-per-view?
It will be pay-per-view.
Any idea how much it will cost?
Not yet. We're putting all that together. I mean, obviously, I have my time right now is consumed by our upcoming fights that we have, including the Triple G Canelo fight. But we're putting all that together as we speak. I'm hiring a team of people that we have in place in order to deliver the best product possible to the MMA fans.
Is this going to be called Golden Boy MMA, or do you have another name on your mind?
It is Golden Boy MMA.
Okay.
We're still, like I said, trying to figure out logistics. But let me tell you one thing: there's no other promoter, boxing or MMA, that knows how to do it best. We at Golden Boy Promotions know how to promote fighters. We know how to build fighters. We know how to put fights together in order to make please the fans. So it's no different than actually putting a boxing event together. I'm sure that we have our work cut out for us. But look, we have competent people. We have people that we've hired that know the MMA world, and we're very confident that we'll have the best product that the fans can watch.
Are you going to be the face of the organization? Are you going to be in the same role that you are in the boxing world, or are you going to bring in someone else to head that up?
Well, I personally feel that I have to be the face.
Yeah.
Because the fact that I've laced up the gloves, the fact that I'm a fighter. People respect that. Fighters respect that, and I strongly feel that being the face of the MMA is very important in order to attract the best talent out there.
Could you tell us any other fighters that you're talking to or have signed already? Any other names that are going to be a part of this on November 24th?
No, we have everything. We have everything under wraps, and let's just say that. That a lot of people are going to be surprised and shocked when we announce the undercard and what lineup we have in store for everybody.
When do you expect to announce these fights and names?
Very soon, in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. And are you, like, can you come out and say, we you know this, people have competed with Dana White, you've competed with Dana White as far as media is concerned. Are you coming out to compete with the UFC? Do you feel like they are ripe for the taking?
No, not at all. There's no competition whatsoever. No, what I'm trying to do is just open up another door for fighters another platform for fighters to have. There's no competition whatsoever with the UFC. I'm just giving the fighters a different avenue to have a choice. The UFC has been doing a wonderful job. They do a tremendous job. Dana White, you have to commend for what he's been doing, but I'm just sick and tired of fighters always coming up to me every single day telling me they don't get paid enough money.
And how much, like, how many times is this a one-off for you, or have you already earmarked three events, four events? What kind of commitment and investment are you?
This is obviously the first event that we're going to be promoting. I figured that I start with a big bang with the two biggest names in the MMA world. And then we'll take it from there. But I strongly feel that this is not going to be a one-off. I strongly feel that there's a lot of room for growth in this sport. And look, I'm just another player. I'm just another player in the ball game. And there's nothing wrong with that.
As you know, Oscar, even in the boxing world, like, we're moving a little further away from pay-per-view. I know Triple G Canelo on September 15th is going to be pay-per-view, but we're moving. There's less and less pay-per-view. Why debut on pay-per-view? Why not partner up with a network?
Well, obviously, look, pay-per-view is if you're fighting on pay-per-view, you're the biggest star on the planet. Look, pay-per-view is obviously the biggest money generator out there. Till this day. And, fighters like Mayweather, fighters like myself and Manny Pacquiao have proved it over and over again. And now that you have the two biggest stars in boxing with Canelo Alvarez and Triple G, the platform is perfect, a pay-per-view platform where millions of people will be watching and will be able to generate a lot of buzz and money for the sport of boxing. So, look, there are various platforms now to choose from, but when you're a pay-per-view fighter, you know you're special.
What do you say, Oscar, to people who roll their eyes at the fact that Chuck Liddell's coming back, he's close to 50, Ortiz is close to 45, they're both coming out of retirement? You know about the fighter who hangs around too long. You know about how, you know, they fight, how they look, how they speak. Why these two guys? Why bring back the old guys to headline your first show?
Well, I mean, don't call Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz old. And obviously Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz have spoken to Bernard Hopkins, who I believe is the oldest boxing champion in the history of the sport. And he was able to do it till he was 50-some-odd years old at the highest level. So, look, Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz are warriors. They're fighters who just want to do it a third time and give the fans the trilogy. And the beautiful part about this fight is that we know for a fact that it's going to be a great fight.
So as you prepare for this, you're also preparing for September 15th. That's Triple G Canelo. The first fight is the, I believe, third highest grossing fight in boxing history. Is there any chance this fight surpasses that? Could it be as big, if not bigger, than Mayweather-McGregor? I feel like Pacquiao and Mayweather is untouchable at this moment, but is there any chance that this second fight is a higher grosser than the first fight?
There's a huge chance. Everything is on track to surpass those numbers from the first fight. We strongly feel that we're going to break some records, because people know that the first time around it was a terrific fight. It was an amazing fight. It was probably one of the best fights that boxing has had in quite some time. So the fact that there's animosity with both guys, the fact that they're both talking smack, I think everybody knows that this time around there is going to be a knockout.
Did you guys have a say in the referee, the judges this time around, so that there's no funny business like the last fight?
It was all a collaboration of both teams. Everybody was happy with the judges for this fight the second time around. My president Eric Gomez flew down personally to Las Vegas alongside Triple G's promoter. They came into an agreement. The commission is happy. Triple G's side is happy, and we're happy.
Okay. And what do you expect this to do on pay per view? Do you think it could get close to 2 million? Do you think it could be? What is a success for you?
Absolutely. We strongly feel that we can get close to that 2 million homes. And And once again, we're tracking to do one of the biggest gates in boxing. So we feel that come September 15th that we can break once again some pay-per-view records.
Do you like ballpark? What does that gate look like right now?
Well, it's definitely going to be by far the third largest once again, behind McGregor and Mayweather and Pacquiao and the first fight with Canelo and Golovkin.
Okay. And do you believe, Oscar, in oversaturation? Do you feel like sometimes too much of a good thing is not a good thing, basically that there may be too much combat sports on TV these days that you have to pick and choose a little? I mean, you can't go a day without seeing some kind of live fight on some kind of platform. Do you feel like that's something that people need to be concerned about?
No, I strongly feel that the more the merrier. I think as long as you're delivering a good product, people are happy. I think people, the fight fans, the MMA fans, they know when they see a good product. And I've always believed that as long as you're delivering good fights, you can't go wrong.
Did you hear about this Logan Paul KSI boxing match a couple of weekends ago in England?
No, I didn't.
The two YouTube guys that sold out the Manchester Arena, they're not even pro boxers, they're amateurs, and there was like 800,000 people watching it for $10 on YouTube. You didn't hear about this at all?
I actually did hear about it because my kid told me that 14 years old.
Yeah, it's targeted to 14-year-old kids, and it was a smashing success. And a lot of people were saying, like, look, these guys are drawing. They're not even pro boxers, but they're able to capture the imagination. Why can't, you know, combat sports do this on a regular basis? And I was wondering if you had some kind of theory as to why they were able to do it so well when, you know, big fights are few and far between, and especially like big money-making fights.
Yeah, no, it goes to show you that social media, the digital platform is right now a king. Like Logan Paul and his opponent, I don't want
KSI.
To pronounce his name, KSI, did a phenomenal job in promoting it. Obviously, they're not fighters, they're not boxers. I heard the fight was kind of like a sparring match.
Mm-hmm.
But look, kids are paying for it, they're watching it. These guys are YouTube sensations. More power to them.
Before I let you go, Oscar, I just want to quickly wrap up on November 24th. Liddell Ortiz, are they a part of Golden Boy MMA in terms of management? Like, once this fight is over, are they going to be working for you as well?
Well, no, they're not. They're not under a management contract. I am promoting Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz. It might be a one off. I might continue promoting MMA, but for now, I'm just focusing and promoting Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz.
How do you decide if you're going to continue or not? Like, do you have a benchmark? Do you have something that you need to see get done in order to determine if you're going to keep going with this?
No, it's like I had a gut feeling when I started going to Boy Promotions. I'm going to go with my gut. Obviously, we know that it's going to be a huge success because of the names and because of the rivalry they've had over the years. But I'm just going to go with my gut and see how I feel.
You've talked about, you know, being sick when people come up to you and tell you about how, you know, little they're making. One of the hot topics in MMA is a union. Do you feel like UFC fighters should form a union, or do you feel like combat sports just isn't structured to accommodate something like that?
Well, look, I mean, obviously UFC is the 800-pound gorilla, and I don't know anything about what kind of contracts they sign, but the only thing I know is that fighters are unhappy, and fighters are always complaining to me personally. And I'm not saying that UFC fighters are complaining to me, because I don't deal or talk to any fighters who are under contract. That's my number one rule. But fighters who are free agents maybe are saying, look, we don't get paid enough money. We deserve more. And I tell them right back, yes, you do. You deserve more. So part of the reason why I'm starting Golden Boy MMA is to make sure that these fighters are treated fairly.
Have you heard from...
I got to get to another call, my man.
What's that?
I got to get to another call.
Okay, thank you, Oscar. I appreciate it.
All right, brother.
All right, there he is. Oscar De La Hoya saying goodbye somewhat abruptly. But interesting stuff. I didn't know that we had a heart out, as they say in the business. But I appreciate him coming on. Good to hear from Oscar. And very interesting to hear him say that, yes, they do want to stick around in MMA, although what's also interesting is that it doesn't sound like that is a set thing. For now, it seems like a one-off, and then they'll see how it goes. I've heard about some other names that may be involved, none that would shock us, as he put it, but some names that are notable in our little world, our little circle. So that's November 24th, Inglewood, California, the Forum, events like UFC 199, Bellator had an event there this past year in January, the Quentin Rampage Jackson and Chael Sonnen event. I wonder why he got it. Did I bother him there? I don't understand. I wonder why he got off so abruptly. But there you have it. Oscar De La Hoya, Golden Boy MMA, that is a thing, November 24th, Inglewood, California. Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz 3. No other fights have been announced, and it's honestly been a strange rollout. It's like there hasn't been a press release. Chael doesn't think that this is a real thing. Chael doesn't think that push comes to shove, this will actually happen. He is convinced that this is not going to happen. He said it on our show several weeks ago. He believes that this is just some kind of PR stunt, and Oscar isn't poking the bear. He isn't going after the UFC. He isn't trying to rile up Dana White or anyone at the UFC. And it was interesting to also hear him say that he's not talking to any UFC fighters, when initially he was kind of saying, well, you know, I hear from people. Well, who are these people that you're talking to? They're getting a slice of the revenue, but how much of this revenue are they getting? So hopefully as time goes on, we'll get more answers, but it was good to hear from Oscar on this Tuesday afternoon. I know he's in New York City as well. We couldn't get him to stop by the studio because he was at the other ESPN studio, which is all the way downtown. That is quite a trek. But good to hear from him as Triple G Canelo gets closer and closer. It's in 11 days, and November 24th gets closer and closer. All right, matter of moments, we're going to be joined by James Vick, first interview since his loss to Justin Gaethje. But first, let me tell you about our good friends over at FanDuel. We love FanDuel. As you know, it's been a long off season without football, but FanDuel has spent it getting into the best shape of their lives. That means this. FanDuel is ready for more. More ways to play, more ways to challenge your friends, and most importantly, more ways to win. If you're not a daily fantasy expert, then FanDuel is clearly the best place to play. They have all kinds of contests just for casual fans. In particular, Beat the Score contests are great because they pay out everyone who hits a certain score, so all you have to do is finish in the money to split an equal share of the cash. And FanDuel also has new options for playing daily fantasy with your friends, because the only thing better than winning cash is winning your friends' cash. Best of all, FanDuel is doing their best part to make the preseason bearable, but the preseason isn't over. So why am I reading that? Right now, you can get a $20 bonus when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/Ariel. Age and state restrictions apply. Again, that's FanDuel.com/Ariel. Season starts on Thursday. No time for the preseason. We got to go. Eagles, Falcons, and then it's full swing. All right. Thank you very much to FanDuel. Support them because they support us. And thank you also to my good friends over at Body Armor, who are back in the fold as well. It's all coming together, my friends. Nothing like drinking some Body Armor as we do the program. Strawberry banana. This is not an ad, by the way. They don't pay me to do this, but I like it. It's good. It gives me some extra oomph. Okay, James Vick coming up. After James Vick, we'll talk to Mike Perry, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, Trevor Whitman. The list goes on and on, plus a fun announcement from one Uriah Faber. But first, let us go to the phone lines and say hello to James Vick. James, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, James. I really appreciate you doing this. I know it's been somewhat of a difficult time, and I appreciate how open you've been about it on social media. Sometimes people just disappear, but you've really worn your heart on your sleeve, and I think that is something that I think the fans can really appreciate, and I certainly do as well. Could you tell us, what are we, around 9 days or so removed from the fight? What has this been like for you, this experience?
I mean, honestly, it's been depressing, man. It's very depressing. I mean, honestly, I still don't know what to say about a lot of it. Honestly, I got caught, you know? I got caught, and the only thing I thought in my mind when everything happened, as I went back and, you know, I remember I had a towel over my head and I was crying, and me and my coaches and my teammates, you know, were there, you know, talking to me, trying to calm me down. And I was just like, I fucking blew it. You know, that's what I thought in my mind. You know, I blew it. And it's a hard one to swallow, you know, because you never know when you're going to get those opportunities again. And especially someone like me, you know, someone who had to win twice as many fights as most people to even get that opportunity, you know? And then I had to, you know, I understand, you know, a lot of the fans and stuff, you know, were happy to see me lose because I talked a lot of shit. You know, I can't, you know, be mad at them for feeling that way, you know, because I did talk a lot of shit, you know, but at the end of the day, I wouldn't have got the fight if I wouldn't have talked shit, you know? I wouldn't have got that fight. Gaethje was the only top 10 guy that would agree to fight me. And I got that fight because Aya Quinta got hurt or pulled out or whatever, you know, or I still wouldn't have had it. So I just, you know, and I can't be mad at anybody but myself. I fucking blew it, and that's just how I feel, you know. It's very depressing feeling.
Some people, including Gaethje, have noted that you looked scared, you looked tentative, you didn't seem like yourself. Is that accurate? Did you feel more nervous as you were walking out? Did the main event get to you? Did you overthink it? Are these people who are insinuating what was going through your mind, are they onto something?
Not at all. Not at all, man. And that's crazy you say that, because I thought I heard Gaethje say on an interview that he thought he saw that I was 100% confident. I've honestly, Errol, I've never been you know, I've never been so confident in my life. I've never been so relaxed in my life. I mean, I don't understand what anybody was seeing and saying that. I really don't. I saw the commentators after the fight. I saw, you know, the post-fight show, Kenny Florian, and them saying I looked nervous. I was not nervous at all. I have no excuses, man. I'm not, you know, a bitch-ass dude who makes excuses, you know. I got fucking knocked the fuck out, and I got caught, but I was 100% healthy. I was confident as could be, and I wasn't nervous at all. Like, not even I was probably less. I mean, I don't get that nervous anyway. As it is, y'all see me when I come to the ring. I'm smiling. I'm happy. You know, I'm like a little kid because I love my job. I love being a UFC fighter, and I couldn't believe when I watched after the fight how everyone really. Maybe they're just looking for answers of why I got caught or whatever. I don't know. I mean, the answer is, you know, Justin Gaethje did what he did, you know, and he you know, he was the better man that night, and he caught me, you know, and but that wasn't the case at all. I've never been so relaxed in my life for a fight, to be honest with you, and so confident.
The quote from Justin last week on the show was, quote, "I couldn't wait to see the look of death on his face. He was so terrified, and I loved it." That was his. So it sounded like he was insinuating that you looked scared before the fight.
I mean, I heard an interview after. I thought that I heard him say, you know, Vic was very confident or whatever. You know? And that's cool. You know, I don't have any remorse against Justin Gaethje for saying those things. I mean, I talked a lot of shit. I mean, granted, you know, he talked some shit too. You know, at the press conference and stuff that we had. You know, I didn't initiate that shit. Talk, you know, he initiated that, and I felt like I got the better of the press conference, you know. But I just said, you know, John Morgan asked me a question, I answered it, and then he started popping off, so I rebutted back. But you know, I did, you know, I talked a lot of shit, but I honest to God, in my mind, still, you know, whether I'm wrong or right, I wouldn't have got that fight if I wouldn't have talked all that shit.
Yeah,
you know, me being a good person and a good guy who's always been quiet, and I've never. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, you got humbled, you know, you now you're being nice and post after. When have I ever disrespected an opponent after I beat them? When I beat Joe Duffy, I took a picture with him and was 100% respectful. I'm not disrespectful, but my path is a lot harder than a lot of these guys. And, you know, it doesn't make it right. It's not fair, but life ain't fair, you know, and at the end of the day, I fucked up. You know, you take a guy like look at Poirier, for example, Ariel. And I know, you know, me and you talked and we text and everything, and you said, you know, you're a main event, you don't go back from here. But I wish that was the case. I really do wish that was the case, Ariel. But like, you take a guy like Dustin Poirier, for example, and I would, you know, I'm not trying to discredit him. What he's did with his career is phenomenal. He, you know, he's came back, revived his career, and he deserves all the success he has. You know, I've never talked, he's one of the few guys that I've always respected and never did, I've called him out to try to fight, obviously, but I've never disrespected a guy or anything like that. But you take a look at a couple years ago, you know, he beats Michael Johnson. And, he fights Michael Johnson and gets knocked out in the first round just like I did, gets slept. And then he turns around, he wins one majority decision against Jim Miller, and then he gets to fight two former world champions back-to-back. That will never happen for me. You know, I'm not delusional, you know, because at the end of the day, I don't have the name that he has. He came from the WBC as a bigger name. And, you know, I'm not 5'9". I'm a 6'3" lightweight that people don't want to fight. And, I fucking blew it. I can't blame nobody but myself, but I have three fights left on this new deal. I could win all three of these fights, and it's still going to be hard to get someone ranked above me to fight me. You know, I'm not going to get that opportunity. You know, Anthony Pettis is 3-5 in his last 8 fights, literally 3-5, and beat one guy in the top 15. Now he's fighting the number one contender. I'm not going to get those opportunities, man. And it's depressing because I didn't lose any confidence in myself as far as me being able to beat these guys. You know, I like I said, I have 3 5 fights on this deal. I'm not getting cut from the UFC. I'm not worried about that, but my standards are higher than that, man. My goal is to be a fucking world champion. It's always been to be a world champion. I'm 9-2 in the UFC and been in the UFC for 6 years. Most people would consider that a phenomenal career. Well, if I'm not a champion, to me, that don't mean shit. You know what I'm saying? And it's going to be hard for a guy to get to these guys to agree to fight me, you know, because I don't have the name. And I've showed, besides getting caught with a couple overhands, I haven't shown a lot of vulnerability in my fights, you know, so I get it. And, you know, it's a depressing feeling being in this position because I had that opportunity and I fucking blew it, man. And you know, I can't blame anybody but myself.
So it sounds to me, James, and again, I really appreciate the honesty. I don't necessarily agree with you, but I appreciate where you're coming from. it's not so much the loss that bothers you. It's what's to come. You are afraid that this loss is going to bring you all the way down back the ladder, and you are afraid that you are not going to get another chance in the main event because of one singular loss. Is that accurate?
100%, or just not. Like I said, it's not even about being a main event. It's about the pursuit of being a world champion, man. My standards are higher than a lot of these guys. They're happy being 2-2 and just being in the UFC and telling, you know. And I'm not trying to disrespect those guys. You know, they are. But I am who I am. You know, this is crazy. I'll think about this. If I don't get, and this is this. Like I said, I can't blame anybody but myself. You know, I'm not sitting here complaining. It's not my team's fault. It's not my coaches, my training partners. They didn't let me down. I let them down, you know. And I win these next three fights, Errol, and I still don't get a top guy to fight me. And I don't. I win the next three fights. I'm 12-2 in the UFC and still haven't got beaten a top 10 guy. That's unheard of. That is fucking unheard of. To be, if I win these next three fights, I'm 12-2 in the UFC. Most people 12-2 in the UFC have fought for a world title probably multiple times. That's unheard of. But at the end of the day, you know, I fucking screwed myself. You know, I that's how I feel. I'm not down at myself as far as my skill set. I'm not questioning myself. I'm probably about to have to fight another row of killers like I already have. And you know what? Fuck it. You know, line them up. I ain't afraid of nobody. But what's depressing to me is, you know, the opportunity that I blew. You know, because I can win these three fights, and I might not be any closer to becoming a champion than I am right now.
Why?
Even with three more wins.
But James, why do you not believe that you're not going to get that? Why do you feel like the UFC isn't going to reward you for stepping up? Why do you feel like they're never going to give you another chance because you lost one fight? As you said, many guys have lost in the main event.
It's not the champion. Like I said, it's not even the main event. It's the fact that these guys don't want to fight me, man. They don't. They got any. First of all, people that are ranked in the top 10, they don't want to fight people that are ranked below them anyway. And they definitely don't want to fight a 6'3" lightweight that really hasn't shown a lot of vulnerability. You know, besides getting caught with a couple of overhands, you know, I haven't shown a lot of vulnerability, and they don't want to fight me as it is. And it's like, you know, I was so close to being in that group where basically these dudes are grandfathered in. You know, like right now, my only optimism, you know, for people is, like, the only guy right now I see in the top 10 that could be my saving grace is if I could get Edson Barboza to agree to fight me, because he is on a 2-fight losing streak and he's still ranked number 6 in the world. If I could get that fight and win that fight, I would be in. But you know what I'm saying? It's like I talked about this before. It's like once these guys get deep in the top 10, you know, 7, 8, 6, whatever, it's like they're grandfathered in. You know, the dude's lost 2 fights in a row, still ranked 6. Gaethje, before my fight, had lost 2, still ranked number 7 in the world. Michael Johnson had lost 3 out of 4 fights before Gaethje. Was still ranked in the top 10, because it's like once you get in that group, you're like grandfathered in where you can take L's amongst each other. But like I just feel like I'm not in that group. I mean, I pray that I am. I pray that I can win one fight, maybe two, and get another guy. But I just don't see any of those guys that are going to agree to fight me that are ranked above me. I don't see it.
Have you watched the fight again?
Oh yeah, yeah, 50 times already.
And do you think, is it just one of those, I got caught, you know, Gaethje spoke last week, improved footwork, patience, was waiting for the right moment. In your opinion, your theory, why did you get caught so early?
I got caught, you know, see, what's crazy is him saying that he felt like I was, or whatever you said, that I was unconfident or nervous or whatever. You know what I felt in there? I'll be honest with you, with him, I felt him unconfident. When I hit him with that jab and the side kick and everything, I felt like, and I landed that body kick, and I know that body kick hurt him, and he you know, he said it hurt him a little bit. I felt like he was like, not that he was scared, never that, you know, he's a warrior, but I just felt like he was like thinking, like he was kind of like confused about what he was going to do, you know, and maybe I felt that wrong, you know, or whatever. But what happened basically for me is I got too close to the fence, and I let my back get too close to the fence, and I got caught. And that was something, what's crazy is that was something I never anticipated would be a problem, because I knew his game plan was going to be to put me against the fence. I heard Trevor Whitman in an interview saying, oh, well, we expect to beat Vic in the middle of the ring. We're going to put him on the fence and do our work. And I knew that was going to be the plan, but in all my fights, I've always rode that cage. I was taught to ride that cage, and when I was my time on the Ultimate Fighter, you know, Dominic Cruz, you know, at that time, you know, my grappling wasn't, you know, at the level it is now. And Dominic Cruz, you know, his system, you know, we did cage work like 3 days a week in the Ultimate Fighter, and we would always do tons of cage work, and it was always, if you ride close to the fence, it's the anti-wrestler. You can get up anytime you want if you know how to use that fence, and I've, throughout my career, I've always did that, and nobody's been able to hold me down. And I've never had a problem of being too close where I've gotten caught with a shot like that. And I really, you know, that's obviously my misjudgment and mistake. I never anticipated that would even be a problem. I knew that he was going to do that, and I thought that I would be perfectly fine being close to the fence, and it didn't turn out that way.
You posted on social media afterwards a picture of both of you together and saying to people it was the worst day of your life and thanking Justin and almost – you know, you're talking about the trash talk. I think you have nothing to apologize for. Everyone does. It's a part of the game. And like you said, you had to do it to get the fight. But what did you guys talk about? What advice did he give you?
Well, he was, he was a cool dude. Honestly, when they made me go to the hospital, gave me a CT scan, you know, everything was good. We came back to the hotel about like, it was like probably like 3 a.m. And he was there with his family in the lobby, and he was a little tipsy already. So he was, you know, it was pretty funny. He was a cool dude, very respectful. I shook his hand, gave him a hug, and he was like, you know, it happens. He's like, this whole game, you know, he was basically like, this whole game is all luck. You know, it could have been me. He's like, you did deserve this opportunity. He's like, a lot of this is politics, you know, and you did deserve this opportunity with the records you had and everything. He's very nice and supportive and everything, you know, and I told him, hey man, you know, I really do appreciate the opportunity. You know, you're the only guy that would agree to fight me, and I, honest to God, really do appreciate it.
You called it the worst day of your life. Did you mean professionally or period? That was the worst day of your life.
Just, I mean, you know, I know a lot of people, I get that, you know, everyone's like, you know, oh, if you lose a fight, that, you know, your life is pretty easy if that's the only thing. But, you know, I get people have terminal illnesses. There's people with real problems in the world. But when you invest your entire life in this, you know, I started this game late. My entire adult life. I didn't start training until I was 20 years old. So for me to be able to catch where I'm at now, for me to be able to catch these guys that I've caught, I've had no life for the last 10 years, none whatsoever. Like I haven't drank alcohol in 2 years. It's not that I'm opposed to drinking it, but I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't party. I've literally had no life for the last 10 years. This has been 11 years. This has been my entire life because I had to make it this way to catch guys that have been wrestling since they were 5 years old and to catch this stuff. And I've skill set. I have caught these guys, you know, and I've proved that with my previous wins, you know. A lot of these guys I beat have literally been training 10 years longer than me. So I didn't have that option. I've had no life. I don't have a plan B, and I mean, it's not like I said, it's not, like you said, it's not like my career is over, and I'm not, you know, I'm not unconfident in myself in any aspect. It's just I'm unconfident in the opportunities I'm going to get from this point forward, and I can't blame anyone but myself. But yeah, it's one of the worst days, probably one of the worst days of my entire life, because, you know, when you stake your entire existence on something and this shit happens, you know, it's fucking devastating, man. It really is.
You have lost once before in the UFC. It was in similar fashion. You rose up. You climbed the ladder. Was that climb back, you know, from UFC 199 so exhausting that, like, do you feel like it's just too much to do all over again? Because you did it once before. Why can't you do it again?
Not at all. I don't feel like it was exhausting because I love doing this. I wake up every day. I was back in the gym on Wednesday, and that's not because I lost. Even when I win fights, I'm back in the gym 2, 3, or 4 days later. I love this. It's not the climb's exhausting. It's that I'm older. The UFC did. I was 5-0 at one point. It's like 27 or 28 years old, and the UFC didn't want to promote me then. Why the fuck would they do it now? Especially, I did all this begging and basically fucking had to cry damn near to get this opportunity, and I fucking blew it. You know, I'm going to get the opportunity again, but it may be another 2 years. You know what I'm saying? And I'm 31. I'm not old, and I feel young, and I started late. So, you know, it's not like I'm all messed up in the body or anything like that. Like I'm good to go, and I've never lost my passion, but it's harder you got other guys that do deserve opportunities. You know, these other guys coming up, they deserve opportunities as well. You know, I'm not hating on them or acting like I'm, you know, more privileged or whatever. I mean, I do have double the wins some of these guys have in the UFC, but if you win 4 or 5 fights in a row, you deserve an opportunity too. You know, I'm not hating on that. It's just, you know, I mean, I just don't see an avenue where one of these guys is going to fight me. One of these guys ranked above me is going to fight me again. I'm going to win. I'm going to win these three fights on this contract, and they're still going to be like, "Well, he's still never got a top. He's never beaten a top 10 guy. Every time he does, he blows his opportunity or whatever." And to this point, they're right. So, you know, I understand their logic in thinking that, but I mean, at the end of the day, I win these three fights, I'm literally 12-2 in the UFC, and you know, and going to be the only guy in history of the thing that hasn't beat a top 10 guy with a record like that, you know. And we're in the deepest division in the world.
You talk to anyone at the UFC since the fight? Did they say anything about your future? What they want next for you? Any conversations between you, your management, UFC?
Yeah, I text I text Sean Shelby, and I said, "Man, you know, Sean, I blew it. You know, I fucking blew it. You know, I'm sorry, but I really do appreciate the opportunity. Thank you for giving me that main event. I appreciate it." And he said, "You know," he's like, he basically texted back. He said, "Everyone loses, James. And, you know," he's like, "I'll get you another fight, and you know, so you can get this taste out of your mouth." And he said, "I appreciate you promoting the fight the way you did, and making people want to tune in and watch it."
All right,
and then I said thank you, and then I talked to him. I saw Paul Felder said he wanted to fight before the end of the year's up in, you know, December. I guess he said in Milwaukee where he does his training camps and everything. And I, you know, and then he posted it later on Twitter, and I replied to that. I said, you know, I'll take the fight with you. You know, I feel like I at least owe you that option if you want it, because I did pull out. You know, I mean, granted, anybody would have pulled out for a main event, but I figured I'd give him the chance or whatever. But he hasn't even replied. And if he don't want the fight, then, you know, I'm not, you know, whatever. I'm not going to talk crap to get it. You know, I was just going to offer it because, you know, I did pull out on short notice like that. And then, you know, he ended up taking a fight and breaking his arm, and, you know, circumstances changes for both of us. But I mean, you know, I would love to fight him by the end of the year. I would love to fight Edson Barboza. I would love to fight him and get another chance at someone at the top. You know, I mean, I would love to, you know, but if I got to fight everybody ranked right below me, you know, or whatever, you know, I ain't fucking scared of nobody. You know, I'm not running, you know, I'm going to do whatever is best and whatever options I can get. But, you know, for career wise, but I mean, you know, I ain't afraid of nobody. So line them up, you know, what the fuck ever, you know.
Hang in there, James. I appreciate you doing this. I appreciate you wearing your heart on your sleeve. I appreciate how honest you are about everything. Try not to be so hard on yourself, because I do believe that you're right in that mix. And one loss should not, you know, erase everything you did to get to this point. So again, thanks for coming on. Thanks for being such a great sport about it all and being so candid. And honestly, try not to be so hard on yourself. You're in this sport, fans, one thing I've learned is that they have such great short-term memories. You get one big win, everyone forgets about the last one. So do not worry about it. Always a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. I appreciate the support you always give me, man. Thanks.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. There he is, James Vick. Tough time for him. Called it the worst day of his life, the loss to Justin Gaethje in Lincoln, Nebraska, getting knocked out in just over a minute. And he is right. He had to work hard to get that fight, and he had to climb the ladder. But lest we forget, back at UFC 199, he did lose via knockout, and he was able to climb that ladder back then. And for some reason, it's always tough for guys. He brings up Anthony Pettis. It's a great point. It's tough for guys to get through that glass ceiling, and you almost have to prove that you can do it once. And then once you do it once, then you're in that. You're in that orbit for quite some time. I mean, a guy like Pettis, as he mentioned, his record since losing to RDA isn't stellar. It's less than 500, but he's always in that orbit. He's not fighting on Fight Pass. He's not fighting on the prelims. He's always fighting on a main card. He's always fighting in a big fight in a main event. He's fighting Tony Ferguson. After losing to Beneil Dariush, Vic has had to work his way up, no doubt about it. Trujillo, Reyes, Duffy, Trinaldo, and then he gets the Gaethje fight. I don't think that a loss should erase all of that. All right, let's move along to our next guest. Very excited to talk to him. He's been in the news all over the place this past week. A lot of drama in the life of Mike Platinum Perry. Always great to talk to him. Let's say hello to him right now. Mike, how are you?
Hey, what's good, Ariel?
It's good to talk to
good,
you,
Mike. Man.
What's happening over there in Albuquerque? Is there some kind of drama? What's happening? Every day there's more headlines about you, Donald Cerrone, the gym. What is going on?
You know, I don't know what I got. I mean, I got thrown into all this just because I'm the opponent.
Right.
Okay. People don't seem to understand that I am not the cause of all this. This has nothing to do with me, okay? I got a name on a contract. That's what I do. That's what he does, too. So I think that's why there's no animosity between me and him, but I do what I do. I promote a fight. I know that I'm going to be fighting someone, and I make issues. I say things that I believe to be true in my social media posts,
mm-hmm.
and I talk a little trash to get the anger flowing so that when we go in there, we can bash each other's skulls up against one another's, and there will be blood and violence, and people will cheer and roar, and the crowd will go crazy.
So prior to your last fight, Mike, you joined Jackson Wink, right? You went to Albuquerque. You enjoyed it. You met some guys there. You met some coaches there. You seemed to find, you know, a good spot for yourself there. And I remember prior to that fight in July, in early July 226, Yancy Medeiros pulls out, and there was some talk that maybe you'd fight Donald Cerrone. A lot of people were scratching their head, well, he's fighting at Jackson Wink, but it seemed like, or training at a Jackson Wink, but it seemed like you guys were in a good place. When did the drama start? When did these, like, when did you first start to get an inkling that something was awry here?
Well, Cowboy doesn't really come to Jackson Winks. He did once or twice, and I think it was to meet me and spar with me, get some work, and really he stays out at his BMF ranch, and now he's moving to Colorado, or he's moving. I saw something said he's Team Alpha Male. I don't know how old that is. I don't know if that's real, true, happening, or what. And if he's, I mean, you know, I think he's going to try to grapple me anyways. Team Alpha Male, Uriah Faber, they do the grappling thing. But, you know, apparently there was animosity. I don't think Cowboy has been friends with Coach Wink for a while. And, you know, like I said, he doesn't come to the gym. He does his own thing. They think he doesn't really help the gym out. This is things that I'm hearing.
Okay.
Things I know nothing about personally. You know what I'm saying? Except when I was here last camp, he came to the gym once or twice out of the 2 months that I was here. So all the other times he's at BMF Ranch, or he's got, like, you know, he's got, I'm around his people every day. His squad that goes to the BMF Ranch and trains with him and stays up with him, they're I'm sparring with them. They're watching me spar. They're watching me hit pads. You know, and they're doing some drills on the ground, his grappling coach, Harry, and they're all around me every day, and you can feel the hate in the air. Like, I did something, you know what I mean? But really, I posted last night a video, and I said, you know, we haven't necessarily been working on anything so cowboy-specific. We've just been working on a better Mike Perry, a better mixed martial artist Mike Perry. And, you know, that's all we've been dealing with, as making me a better kickboxer. Me and Frank Tank, man, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm in Winklejohn's gym, and Greg Jackson and like, you know, Greg ran sparring this morning. And but it's just sparring, you know what I mean? We do some warm-ups, and then we get in there and we scrap. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Frank the Tank is my main coach now. He's my head coach. That's the style I'm working towards. I hit those mitts, and I hit them often, and they keep me fresh, and that's the style I try to use on people when I'm sparring, when I'm fighting, whatever I'm doing. He's trying to keep me tight, keep the kickboxing going, stop the takedowns, and hit people with knees and elbows, punches and kicks at all times. I'm not even really grappling anymore. Like, I'm stuffing takedowns and I'm elbowing people. I'm trying to hit people at all times. So, but not, it's not that, you know, I mean, and I also, I posted a video last night and I said, when I first got this fight, I thought I'd be crazy not to work with Frank the Tank, who has been around Cowboy. Like, it'd be stupid. It'd be idiotic. But yesterday, there was so much hate in the air, I thought a couple of ways. I thought, maybe I shouldn't be around all this. I believe I could go back to Florida with my other team and beat Cowboy training that way anyways. But
I came to Albuquerque for the mitts that I hit with Frank the Tank. I've been looking for a mitt holder like this my whole life. I used to hold mitts for people and be like, damn, I need a mitt holder like me. And Frank the Tank is a better version of that because that's what he does now. He's full coach mode now. He's still a little savvy, like kind of wants to fight still, but there are complications with that, so he can't really fight in the U.S. or whatever right now. So he's just strictly coaching. And he gets in there and spars with me a little bit sometimes, and I got to actually see that, like, oh, you know, his timing is crazy. His movement is really good, and, like, I can actually see it firsthand. So that's what I'm here for, man, over everything else. I'm not trying to break nobody up. I'm not trying to hurt nobody's feelings. To me, if Cowboy's moving to Colorado or wherever he's moving, that was something he wanted to do for a while now. And now he's got, like, a reason, something to blame it on, something. And, you know, we bring in the drama. We bring in the heat. We making a story, and we hope that everybody pays attention to this fight because this is going to be a banger, man. We going to scrap. And I ain't going to let him get out easy. Like, you know, when Darren Till cracked him and bust his nose and he just kind of cowered up on the cage and Till was, like, flurrying with these punches that weren't really hitting him but in the shoulders and shit and all, if I crack him and he's up against the wall like that, I'm going to tell him, I'm going to walk back to the middle. Like, bring your ass over here, motherfucker. You're going to have to fight me. I'm trying to put him out.
What are you hearing from people, Mike, at the gym? Are they saying, oh, we're happy that you are the catalyst to get rid of this guy? Or are you hearing, you know, like there's obviously a lot of people there who are connected to him because he's been there for so long. I know he hasn't maybe been at the gym, but he's just been a part of that team for so long. Do you feel someone unwanted? Do you feel like a lot of people are saying, hey, good job, Mike, your presence just made him go away? What is the vibe like towards you? I know you said there's hate in the air, but are people actually coming up to you and telling you things?
No, absolutely not. But I feel like there are whispers.
Okay.
And it's funny because when the people who I feel might be whispering are around, I am talking loud with someone about exactly what I'm going to do to him. And I'm saying, I'm like, look, I'm going to hit him with power hooks. I'm pretty sure he's going to try to hit me with knees and kicks. We're working on countering the kicks with hooks over the top. I'm trying to crack him with some good punches. He knows what I'm going to do. I know what he's going to do. It's either going to be knees, kicks, or he's going to try to take me down and lay on top. These are his options. You know, I'm not getting subbed. I'm not getting rocked with a punch. He's got kicks and knees, and he knows I got punches. He knows how I'm coming. I know how he's coming. But to be honest with you, there's nothing he can do about it. It's my time. I'm younger. I'm stronger. I'm faster. I'm better. I mean, he's good. He's a great kickboxer. But just the style, the way that it's going to match up, my power is just going to overwhelm him. I'm going to be too much. And there's nothing he can do about it. It's my time. It's my turn. And it doesn't matter what anybody's saying here anyways, because me, Wink, and Frank the Tank are trying to go be world champions. And, you know, John Jones is going to be making a comeback. And hopefully, you know, just being around that greatness will inspire me a little more, and maybe me and John can both go get the, you know what I'm saying?
How many times did you spar Donald?
Twice.
How did it go?
No, it was good. I took it easy on him.
You could have gone harder?
Absolutely.
Why'd you go easy?
Well, that's kind of, you know, that's what you do. You know, you get the movement, you're in somebody else's home. I'm not as disrespectful as the whole world might think I am, especially when I'm throwing punches and kicks and I'm actually in my zone. I'm in, you know, I'm passing out respect and trying to get it handed back to me when we're fighting, when we're training, when we're working. So, you know, and then when I was at the BMF ranch, you know what I mean? I see that boxing is a weakness of his, and I have decent boxing power hooks and a 1-2-3 and a jab overhand. You know what I'm saying? That's a weakness of his. So I was pulling my punches. I posted that picture. I'm hitting him with the overhand. I pulled that. But I could have driven it through and rocked his ass. You know, so, but I didn't do that. And then the second time we went like 23 minutes straight.
Whoa.
And it was mostly grappling because we were at the BMF ranch, and I didn't want to just pop off on him with punches, hitting him in the face too much. So I went in on the wrestling and got aggressive to get the energy going. And I thought, or I got, you know, my wrestling, offensive wrestling isn't that great. I'm a better defensive wrestler, and when, especially with elbows and strikes involved. And he ended up getting on top. I might have got up once or twice, and then I went back in for the wrestling and wasn't able to take him down. And he would get on top. And he's very long and has a solid base when he's on top, which for the last 10 minutes of the 23, he was on top of me, and I was creating scrambles. But I'm good at jiu-jitsu off my back. I was trying to calf slice him. I was trying to knee bar him. I was trying to, you know, sweep him over and things like that. But and then it came down to the last minute, and I, you know, he's on top of me in my guard, getting tired, and I just looked at him, and I'm the bigger man, and I was at his house, so I was just like, tapped him on the shoulder. All right, you got it. Good for you. Hmm. But we weren't hitting. My thing is hitting.
Right.
At all times, I'm trying to break your skull open, and I wasn't doing that.
Have you talked to him since the fight was made?
Not really. No, just at the little press conference or whatever. But no, we didn't. You know, and I feel like I should have. I just didn't have the animosity on my mind that I have now that all this drama has come out. I'm like, you know, but it's, I don't know, man. It's, me and Frank the Tank is his boy too, but Frank the Tank is my coach now.
Huh.
And, you know, I mean, and Cowboy is, he's understanding, man. He knows that this is the business he's in. He's either going to win or he's going to lose. Or what, we going to have a great fight and have a draw? Hell no.
How does it feel, Mike, to be the guy who ended the Cerrone-Jackson Wink relationship after all
it
these
ain't
years?
Over. It's over, though.
What do you mean?
It'll be over once I beat him.
Okay.
It'll be over November 10th. When that's over, you know, I talked to his grandma before. I heard stories about grandma. If I beat him up pretty good, you know, hopefully it's his last one. Hopefully I'm the one to end the Cowboy Cerrone reign, and I can take it over from here and restart it fresh like back when he first started. And I'll be that now. So, you know, so grandma ain't got to see him get beat up no more. But we'll see, you know what I mean? He'll be welcome back. Not that he'll want to come back. I don't know if Greg Jackson's going to be in his corner. I would hope that relationship didn't get messed up as well. I doubt it. It is getting messed up because those two are closer than, you know, he. I don't know if him and Winklejohn have always had issues, and because, you know, he does his thing and he's got BMF ranch and he's got amateur fighters that he tried to take from the gym and things like that. But, you know, I don't consider it, you know, people calling me snake and shit. Like, I did some, like, they talking about the TJ Dillashaw, Cody Garbrandt thing, but what I never understood about that was this is fighting. Like, you need to train with other people. You need to go around the world, train with the best gyms, best places, best people, coaches, sparring partners. You need to go work with all these people. And it should not be a problem for another camp. You see what I'm saying? Your old school shouldn't be mad at you because you're going to look for a different look. My old school in Florida, they might have been a little upset, but I had to go look for something different. And I can literally see some of the issues that I used to have, like not bending the back leg and shit like that. I can see it on some of my other teammates from there, that they had like similar issues that I did, because the technique the way they were working the technique was a little different than the way I'm working the kickboxing technique now. So, and I've always been more of a savage brawler, get into the scrap. My team over there was more calculated and more grappling. When I was the best kickboxer I felt that we had over there, and I had to come where there were more great kickboxers, people willing to stand and bang with me in training and sparring and things like that, so that I could get a look of what, you know, of how I'm trying to fight. And then, you know, Frank the Tank, he's a little more like me, a little crazy, a little outspoken, you know, loud person. So he's down to get into a brawl, bang foreheads if you have to. That's how it goes. You saw me in the Paul Felder fight, first thing I did was headbutt his ass. It wasn't intentional, but I was driving in for that right hand, and we split each other's foreheads open. And that was, you know, first thought was, makes the fight look better if we're bleeding first 10 seconds. I love it. Let's go. Oh,
man, you are one of a kind, Mike. And you know what I love? 11 months ago, you're jumping on the cage in Poland and inviting Darren Till to fight you, and then we see this footage that comes out of you guys in L.A., and you're just asking him for a friendly spar. He thought that you meant going to the spa, but then you eventually sparred, right? How did that go?
It was great. It was great work, man.
You guys are buddies now.
What's that?
You guys are buddies now.
Well, I mean, we still want to kill each other for money, but
okay.
You know, the thing was, I felt bad, and I saw my opportunity. I felt bad because I did that to him at his time of glory when he had beaten Cowboy Cerrone, and he called me out, and look at that, you know, like, wow. There are great fighters out there that know that I'm a great fighter, too, and out of respect, he called me out. That's out of respect. He wanted to challenge somebody he believed to be decent, and I kind of crushed on his moment a little bit by jumping on the cage, or I didn't crush on it. I just made future moments possible. So
yeah.
I took advantage of him being there, and I was sure he was going to be down for it. And I said, hey, you know what? I know that you have been wanting to punch me in the face, so let's go do this.
It was a beautiful thing. That clip was amazing. I must have watched it a million times. Last thing for you, Mike, and again, thank you very much for coming on. What's the message to Donald as we approach November 10th? I mean, we still got 2 more months, a little over 2 more months of this, and I feel like the drama is not going to end now. What do you want to say to Donald Cerrone, if you could?
You know, Donald, I do what I do. I talk because that's just the way that it's always gone for me. My mouth just opens and starts moving, and shit starts pouring out. And it is what it is. You already know that we got to do what we got to do. So I'm talking shit. I'm playing mental warfare. We're going to get in there and bash each other's skulls in. And may the best man win.
Much love, Mike. Great stuff. Appreciate you coming on. Good luck in training. We'll check in beforehand.
Be ready, motherfucker. It's going to be epic.
Can't wait. November 10th, Denver, Colorado, 25th anniversary show for the UFC. Always fun to talk to Mike Perry. In fact, they just put out a press release of sorts about that. Moments ago, I got it. Where is it? Did I get rid of it already? Maybe I did. Yeah, I did. But that is happening on November 10th. It is the UFC's 25th anniversary. Did I say 10th anniversary? No, 25th anniversary. That's happening in – oh, here it is. That's happening in Denver. And that, of course, the site of the very first UFC back in 1993, November 12th to be exact. This one is November 10th, but it's pretty darn close. That was at the McNichol Sports Arena. This one at the Pepsi Center, the new home. It's not really new anymore, but that's where the Nuggets currently play. They used to play at the McNichol Sports Arena. Frankie Edgar versus Chan Sung Jung, a.k.a. the Korean Zombie, in the main event. Mike Perry versus Donald Cerrone is the co-main. Also of note, Raquel Pennington versus Jermaine Durandamy. Joseph Benavidez versus Ray Borg. And on it goes. Tickets go on sale later this week. All right, let's move along. We're on the road to UFC 228. As I said at the top of the show, 228 goes down this Saturday night in Dallas, Texas. It's Tyron Woodley defending his welterweight title against Darren Till. There's only one man on this planet who has fought both men, and he is our next guest. He is the one and only Wonderboy Thompson, still one of the top contenders at 170. Good to talk to him again. Steven, how are you?
Doing great, man. Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. It's good to talk to you as always, and I know that you're squeezing us in before you're going to pick up kids, right? You're going to pick up kids for your school?
You got it, man. I'm actually in the bus right now. I'm going to be sitting at this school waiting for these youngins to come out, so we got time. We got time.
You're unbelievable, Steve. It's unbelievable that you still continue to do this. So you go pick them up in your bus, and then you bring them back to your school. Do you also take them home, or do you just take them to the school?
No, we just take them to the school. You know, we have people there that help them with the homework, get them ready for the karate classes during the day. So the kids that I pick up are actually in our karate program. So we get them ready for their classes, and parents come up and pick them up at 6:15 later on this evening. So
what a man!
It's actually pretty cool.
Unbelievable. Okay, let's talk about you first, Steven. How is your knee feeling? Tell us about your health overall.
I'm feeling good, man. Been back into training right now, you know, training two times a day. You know, of course, I'm always doing that. But, you know, the swelling in my left knee is kind of slowing me down just a little bit. After training, the knee swells up, and I got to work it back down. So it kind of leads me to believe it's something more than just an MCL tear. Of course, that should be healed up by now, but hopefully it's no meniscus. But, you know, we're working it back down, and this is nothing that I haven't seen before, so I'm not too worried about it.
Are you going to get it checked out?
Yeah, I'm going to get it looked at hopefully this week or next. I leave for New York here pretty soon, actually Wednesday. I'll be out there. Just got off the phone with Chris Weidman, actually. So we're looking to team up and get together and get some training in, hopefully before his fight with Rockhold.
Okay, that's interesting. So you're going to help mimic Rockhold as he prepares for that fight.
You know it, man. I've been a part of his camp since the first Anderson Silva fight. And now we're family, so he's got to take me.
Of course, yes, you are his brother-in-law. So after the Till fight in May, did you actually have surgery on your knee?
No, it wasn't surgery-worthy. I just torn the MCL. Thank goodness it was just the MCL, which is, it doesn't need surgery to heal up. But during that fight, yeah, man, I could tell a big difference in the stabilization of my left knee. Wasn't able to angle off like I really wanted to, so it caused some problems while I was out there. But it's feeling fine now. Working the angles like I want to, and just kind of slowly getting back into the process of things, you know.
Do you feel like you injured the knee because of the kicks to your knee that are, you know, are somewhat controversial? Some people don't like them. John Jones made them famous, so to speak. Rampage has talked about it. Do you feel like that's why you injured your knee?
Yeah, I mean it was definitely the side kick that did it to the knee, and you know they're called oblique kicks,
yes.
But you know, most of the time they don't hit the oblique, it's straight into the knee. And that's where I got hit, and I felt some crunching going on when I got hit the first time. And he saw it. And if you go back and watch, I kind of shake my leg out a little bit. And then after that, he throws like two or three more right at the same place. And, you know, I've torn every ligament in my left leg, and I'll be 36 in February. So I take another ACL or, you know, injury again, that could be my career. So I had to kind of back off and kind of change the strategy up a little bit and wait on him to come in, because I couldn't work my angles. I was afraid that it would be more than just the MCL. You know, one wrong twist, and there goes my ACL again, and have to have surgery. You know, the first surgery, I was out for 3 years, you know.
Wow.
So that, for me, would not be good.
I know we spoke just a couple of days after the fight back in May. You were gracious enough to come on, and you believed back then that you won the fight. Here we are almost 4 months later. Do you still believe? Are you even more confident that you won that fight against Darren Till?
No. After a fight, I go back and watch the fight once or, you know, with my coaches to kind of see what I, you know, should go back and work on, even if it's a win or a loss. But I went back and watched this fight over and over again, and I still believe that I won that fight. You know, it was kind of a whole crazy thing that week with him not making weight and, you know, having an hour to get it back off. And he comes back even heavier. And, you know, he didn't really care. To him, it was, you know, I don't think he was trying to make weight, to be honest with you. And that's the second time he's missed weight. So which leads you to believe, hey, you know, hopefully he makes weight this time. He didn't make 171. We'll see if he makes 170, which is kind of what everybody's kind of thinking at this point. You know, he's a big welterweight, big guy, should be fighting at 185, but we'll see if he makes weight for this fight. I saw an interview not too long ago where somebody had shared it with me, and, you know, everybody was asking about his weight, and he said it was crap, man. He's like, you know, I hate cutting weight. It's kind of crap right now. So, yeah, man, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
What was your reaction, Steven, after all of that, thinking you won the fight, knowing that he missed weight, believing that he didn't even try to make weight, and then he gets a title shot. How did you react to that news?
Man, no words to really describe. I mean, you know, the UFC is saying, you know, why are people not making weight? Well, it's obvious. There's no real consequence to it. I mean, you got guys who are low. You know, he was ranked number 8 at the time. Wasn't making a whole lot of money, you know, as compared to what a lot of the people are making in the UFC. So, sure, why not miss weight and move up the rankings? And, of course, he gets the title shot, which the money he's making now is, you know, it's worth it. It made it all worth not making weight the first time and moving up the rankings. And now he's got a title shot. So, you know, UFC's got to know by now why these guys aren't making weight, because there's no real consequences for it. You know, I mean, for a title shot, you know, if you're fighting for the title and don't make weight, you can't fight for the title. So why does it make it any difference for anybody trying to move up the rankings? You should be able to do that. You know, I mean, I'm a professional, and you know, when I say I make weight, I sign that contract to make weight, and by golly, I'm going to do it, you know? And that's just what being a professional is all about.
Is it disheartening?
Now you're getting people. Yeah, it really is. But, I mean, there's really nothing that I can, you know, I can't punish these guys myself. I mean, what can I really do about it? It really, you know, I'm just kind of throwing my hands up in the air right now. What do we do? What do we do? And I think you're going to see more and more of it, because there are no real consequences for it. I mean, these guys are going to move up rankings and make more money than the fight they did before. So why not do that?
You know, it's wild, and I'm not trying to pick on Darren here, but this is, I mean, we've seen this with other people as well. You are ineligible to win a fight of the night bonus if you miss weight, as far as the UFC is concerned. But you could get a title shot after missing weight.
Right.
Isn't that a little strange?
It is. It really is. You know, I'm not the only one, I think, so that, you know, he doesn't. It's just not. It's not fair, man. Of course, life isn't fair, but all you can do is grit your teeth and train harder, and, you know, next time I step in the octagon, be better than I was before, because, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. What can we do? Hopefully we can, you know, all get on the same page with, you know, the fighters, and hopefully we can make something happen. But as of right now, there's nothing we can do about it, man. It's crap. It really is. It's just crap.
When you say all of us getting on the same page, what do you mean by that? Like, are you, like, you know, when you say that, I think association, I think union. Am I looking too far into this? What are you trying to say by that?
Yeah, man. I mean, fighters in general, the fans. I mean, because, you know, it's the organization that's allowing this to happen. They're allowing it to happen, and you've seen it more than once. And now you got Dana White saying, you know, and other people saying, hey, you know, let's go back to the old weigh-ins, because people were making weight then. But then you had crappier fights. You know, we weren't weighing in rehydrating till 5 o'clock in the evening. You know what I mean? And, you know, when I went back and think about how I made weight, it's like, man, how did I make weight then? I mean, that's such a, I mean, compared to what we have now, it's so much easier, so much healthier on the body to be able to rehydrate, you know, earlier in the day. Now there was talk of us doing it, going back to the old weigh-ins, because people weren't making weight. That's not the case. It's the fact that it's just another way of cheating, I think.
Would you suggest that if you miss weight, you are ineligible to get a title shot after a win as well? Is that what you'd like to see at the very least?
Yeah. I mean, you know, not just a title shot, but just more repercussions behind not making weight. Maybe more percentage of the purse, you know, not allowing the guy to make weight, or not allowing the guys to move up in ranking. I don't know. I mean, hopefully, you know, we can figure something out, but, you know, as long as there's just a little bit of a slap on the wrist, people are going to keep doing it. I mean, people are going to, you know, sure, I give up 30% of my purse this time and move up the rankings. Next time I fight, I'm making a killing. You know, I got a title shot, so I'm making tons of money now. You know, it's worth it.
The reality is he did get the title shot. He's fighting this weekend against Tyron Woodley.
Yes, he is.
And you have such amazing insight, because you're the only man to have ever fought both of these individuals. And one can argue that, you know, although you are technically 0-2-1 against them, that you won at least one of those fights. I mean, all very close, some of them controversial as well. Who do you favor going into it?
You know, it's very difficult to pick at this point, because everybody in the top five are just, it's very difficult to pick a fighter, man, to pick somebody, especially at this level. It's just so high. You're just that good. Anything can happen. I mean, you go back and watch the Luke Rockhold and Bisping fight. I could have sworn, I mean, everybody knew this. I mean, Luke Rockhold was going to win that fight. And, of course, you saw what happened. But, you know, it's going to be, I think it's going to be an awesome fight. Darren Till definitely has a chance to go out there and put him away. Everybody knows Tyron doesn't do very well with very aggressive guys, guys that just keep, that make him work. And I think Darren is going to do that. Darren's a big, he's a big welterweight. He's a very aggressive guy. He's going to come forward and he's going to make Tyron work. Tyron is one of those guys who waits on his opportunity, as you saw against myself. He waits on that right hand. He's very explosive. Of course, you know, he hits you with it, he's going to put you away. But I think Darren Till definitely has the ability to go out there and not just finish him, but, you know, if he doesn't finish him, then I think he's just going to outwork him. Everybody knows that Tyron, he gasses out with guys like that. So, I think that's going to be my prediction right now. Is Darren Till, you know, they're both very smart guys. You know, Tyron Woodley is very cerebral. I mean, he goes out and he studies his opponents. If you go back and watch my fight against Darren Till, anytime I would throw a punch, he would lean really far back and kind of give up his hips. I think Tyron's going to look to take this guy down.
So wait, does that mean that you are leaning towards Darren Till becoming champion?
Oh, actually, you know what? If that does happen, hopefully that will put me up, you know, closer to a fight. I mean, you know, that would be the right way to go. But as you know, it's very hard to predict. But yeah, man, I'm kind of leaning that way. It's like that little needle's leaning towards, you know, Till a little bit.
Did you see them square off? Do you feel like size will be a major factor? If, of course, he makes weight and everything is kosher, do you feel like size will be a factor in this one?
I think so. I think if Darren goes out there and uses his weight against Tyron, I think it will. I think he'll tire Tyron out. Of course, he's got the reach advantage as well, I believe. He's a big guy. I mean, the strongest guy I've faced in the UFC is Tyron. He's very strong, physically strong. But the biggest welterweight is definitely Till. And he could definitely use that to his advantage against Tyron. Laying on him, just moving forward, and just making Tyron work, I think is the strategy to go. And, you know, if it was me, I would definitely be doing that, using that strategy as well, instead of waiting. If you wait, Tyron can put you away. He, as you saw against me, you know, the second time I fought him, I thought he was going to be a little more aggressive. I didn't expect him to actually back up, which kind of threw me off a little bit. You know, it was kind of a waiting game, to be honest with you. And, you know, he was very explosive, and he waited on me to come in, which led him to land that punch in the fifth round. That kind of put me down.
And so you're probably rooting for Till because you have the two fights against Tyron. That would open things up for a rematch, right? That's probably your best bet if he sticks around at 170, which I don't even think he will. That's the weird thing about this. I feel like he only has like one or two more fights left at 170.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's going to move up. You know, he's even said himself, he's like, you know, I don't even know why the UFC's let me fight at this weight. I'm a big guy. Why, you know, they should be putting me in jail, you know, murdering these guys at this weight. You know, it's crazy, you know, some of the stuff that comes out of his mouth. But yeah, man, I'm kind of leaning towards that. Hopefully, if he does go out there and does what I know he can, and if he's smart about it, he could win. And that will set me up perfectly, I think, for another rematch. Of course, you got guys who are above me. You got, you know, Colby Covington, I hear, maybe getting that next shot. You got Usman moving up the rankings as well. I think he, if something happens, I think he's the filler, right?
Yeah.
Am I right to say that? So you got those guys. But, you know, I feel that I won that last fight against Till, and I think a lot of fans agree with me. And, you know, if he does win, I would love to have that rematch.
There was a report last week from, I do believe, MMA Junkie that said that you were in talks to fight Robbie Lawler in January. Is that still the case?
You know, to be honest with you, I would love to fight Robbie. I've been wanting to fight this guy for a long time. I'm a big fan of him, you know, back when he fought in the Strike Force days. Just knocking dudes out. He's just one of those grinders, man. He don't care. He just goes out there and fights, which is why I'm a big fan of his. Been wanting to fight this guy for a while. So I know he's coming off of a knee injury, his last fight. He's had surgery. That was successful. I know he's back into training. But, you know, it's kind of up in the air, to be honest with you. I really don't know. I don't know. Not really sure if he's going to be ready or not, let alone the first ESPN. I would be an honor to fight on the first ESPN show. You know, of course, after that last fight with Till, Dana said, you know, he's, you know, he kind of owes me one, you know, still not making weight, still letting the fight, you know, going through with the fight. you know, he told me he could have whatever fight I wanted. And we'll see, man. We'll see.
Have they actually even offered you or said that this is something that they want pending his knee, your knee? Like, is this being talked about at all?
I mean, it was, you know, coming off of a knee injury. He was coming off a knee injury, you know, kind of coming in, being healthy pretty much at the same time. There was some early talks about it, but I'm not really sure right now. I'm not really sure where Lawler is, but I'm keeping my fingers crossed. And I know the fans are, too. I think that's something they really want to see. So if it does happen, you know, freaking awesome. If not, well, we'll see who else.
Do I have time for one more question?
Ask away, my friend.
Okay, I was just curious what you thought about last week on the show. Tyron Woodley came on. He's like, yeah, it's nice and good that the UFC has Usman standing by, but if Till misses weight, I'm not fighting this guy on 24 hours notice. I'm preparing to fight Darren Till. I'm not preparing to fight Kamaru Usman. You can have anyone standing by, but I'm a professional, and if this fight doesn't, you know, happen at 170, I'm going to fight him a little above, or I'm not going to fight anyone at all. How do you feel about that? As someone, I mean, you are the ultimate professional. Do you agree with what Tyron is saying? Do you understand where he is coming from here?
I do. I kind of do. I mean, I think he wants to go out there and punish somebody, and that's the guy that he's got on his mind right now, and that's Till. Even though Till doesn't make weight, you know, if it was me, just like he was in my shoes, I had a ton of people support me in Liverpool. I know, is it the Liverpoolians? I think
they
call themselves.
Yes.
You know, they were excited about the fight. You know, I want to be a professional. I trained hard for that fight. And you know, everybody knows, man, training camps are not cheap, man. They're expensive. You know, bringing fighters in, bringing coaches in. You know, you want to, and that's the guy that you're really focused on through the whole camp. You know, every time I hit a bag, I picture Darren Till. Every time I sidekick my dad in the chest, him holding the target or sparring somebody, that's the guy I want to face. So I kind of see where Tyron's coming from, you know, so to speak. But that said, you know, I know he's trying to hold on to that title as long as possible. So even if the fight doesn't happen, or if Darren doesn't make weight, of course he gets to hold on to the belt. So there you go.
Great insight, Stephen. I really appreciate this. I hope your knee gets well soon. Say hello to those kids for us. Thank you so much for doing this before you go pick them up. You're always great to talk to. Such a mensch. And I hope that we get to see you back in there soon rather than later. Thanks so much.
You got it, my friend. Always a pleasure. Hopefully we can do it again sometime. And have a great one, sir.
Same to you. There he is, the one and only Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Asked him to come on at around 2:25, told me he has to go pick up kids from school if we could do it a little earlier. I mean, how do you not love the guy? And interesting insight as far as the Till Woodley fight. He says that he's leaning right now towards Darren Till. That would be very interesting. Size may play a factor. And also interesting to hear him say that Woodley gets a little tired, even though that Woodley, you know, came on a little late. He did lay back a lot in his two fights against Stephen Thompson, but later in the fight, he was able to capitalize on some big moments, which probably sealed the deal for him in the second fight, and in the first fight, perhaps led to the draw. Both fights super close. He's fought them three times, both guys. He's 0-2-1, two losses and a draw, and you can make a very strong case that he won at least one of those. Which one? Tough to say, but all as close as can be. I mean, you cannot get closer fights than that. So that's the main event on Saturday, UFC 228. Want to go back to last week here for a second. We spoke to James Vick earlier, but I think one of the stories of the year, in my opinion, has been, oh, I don't know. I don't want to call it the reemergence. I just feel like, as blunt as can be, I feel like after all these years, and there was a time where he was getting it, but I feel like this year in particular, Trevor Whitman is getting more love and more respect this year than most. And it's long overdue and well-deserved. And I feel, quite frankly, on this program, we need to recognize people like Trevor Whitman a little more. So I reached out to him to have him on the program. Very happy that he said yes. And now he is joining us on the show. Trevor, how are you?
I am wonderful. How are you, my brother?
I'm doing great. And I feel like I almost have to apologize because I feel like I haven't given you the respect and the attention that you deserve. And I feel like the MMA community is giving you more respect and attention after what Rose has been doing, Justin just a couple of, you know, days ago in Lincoln, Nebraska. I feel like you're finally getting that attention, and you got that attention back in the day. You know, you had Shane Carwin, you had Mark Ord, you had a lot of big names. But I feel like this year in particular, people are starting to finally say, like, Trevor Whitman is one of the elite coaches in this game. You don't strike me as one of those people who actually pays attention to this or even cares about this. But have you noticed this as well, that you're starting to finally get a little more of that love?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the nail. You know, I'm underneath the rock, dude. I don't do this for myself. You know, the whole thing being with athletes is being a great coach, you have to be selfless, and the athletes have to be selfish, and that is key. You know, it's not about me, it's about them, and I just get to ride co-pilot and enjoy the process.
This is where I feel like it started. Not so much Rose's win in Brooklyn, not so much her win in Madison Square Garden back in November. But you weren't a part of UFC 224, to the best of my knowledge. You weren't in Rio for that card, right?
Which card was that?
That was the one in May in Rio de Janeiro, headlined by Amanda Nunes versus Raquel Pennington. I don't think that you were part of it. However, you were the big talking point afterwards, because if you may recall, Raquel asked out of that fight, and her coaches said, no, you're staying. And this video of you talking to Nate Marquardt, I believe at UFC 188, emerged. You speaking to him, him saying he was done, and you saying, you know what, I don't feel comfortable with this, I'm going to wave this off. And a lot of people looked at that video as to how a coach should talk to a fighter when he is on the ropes, so to speak, when he is on the verge of quitting. And there's nothing wrong with it, there's no shame. And I wanted to get your take, if you will, on the Raquel Pennington situation. Did you see that exchange? Did you think about your exchange with Nate Marquardt? Why does it seem to be so taboo in MMA to quote unquote throw in the towel?
I would say in their fight, the hard part is the championship fight. You know, there's so much on the line. Is she going to get a chance again? And I mean, the hard part is when you stop a fight, that fighter doesn't make their win money. And you'll hear almost every fighter say, I don't care what's happening, never stop the fight. And I hear that from all my athletes. The situation with Nate was there was something going on with his posture, and I don't know if he got hit with a body shot, but I tried to stop the fight. I went up on the canvas, or on the little deck outside, and then the guy who was heading our corner from the commission in Mexico pulled me down and said, you can't stop the fight. Only the doctor or the referee can stop the fight. So I started looking for the doctor at the moment and couldn't find out where he was, so I went back and continued to coach Nate. And then when I went up into the cage, I looked at him and I whispered to him, I said, did you get hit with a body shot? And he said, no. And he goes, man, I just have nothing left. And once he said he had nothing left, I looked over, I believe it was Big John, and said, hey, John, stop the fight. And he stopped the fight. But the key here is when you stop a fight for an athlete, I mean, everything's on the line. Your relationship, you know, how are they going to handle that type of a scenario? And in my heart, I had that, because I was nervous to stop Nate's fight, but I didn't care about that. It wasn't about me. I had stopped Vernal Phillips against Paul Williams for the WBO, probably back in 2005. And that was our last fight, where I had 15 fights with Vernal Phillips. And I ended up not getting my full purse money. And we lost a relationship because I stopped a fight. So that's always on the line. And as a coach, that's always in your head. But the key is, you know, again, if you can pull someone out from taking too much damage, for me, they can ride the money train longer. And a lot of times at the damaging fights where they're not responsive and there's not a chance to win, you have to step up and protect them. That's your job.
I'm happy you brought up the pay, because I do believe one of the big factors as to why we don't see this in MMA is because they only get half their pay when they step in the cage, as opposed to in boxing when you have a sort of flat fee. Here, you know, you could do a Hail Mary. I mean, someone you know very well, Pat Barry, Czech Congo, Hail Mary type of finish. You are never out, or at least most fighters think that they're never out, and that's a massive burden on the coach, because a fighter may get mad at you and said, I could have. Stop the guy or the female. Do you think about that as well? Because people, when I said this,
completely.
In May, you do think about that. Okay, thank you, Trevor. I appreciate it. Because
No, that's key. That's this sport has so many ways. There's so many ways to finish a fight, and fights will be going one way for the whole fight, and all of a sudden, boom, the other guy finishes the fight when you thought it was no way of happening. And that is super, super important. But again, the key to the fight with Nate, there was something going on where he just wasn't there. And again, one of the things I note, especially from boxing, because there's lots of deaths in boxing compared to MMA, is you start to see weird postures where it's almost like their body isn't reacting correctly. And that is what I've seen. I deal with Nate all the time, daily, every day, and I've never seen that posture. It's that hunch in the shoulders, almost like he took a body shot. And that was unique. And when I asked him if he took a body shot, I had to stop that fight. I felt like there's no way he's going to come back from that if he's looking that way. It was something unique about the way he was moving around.
How many years have you been coaching for?
I started coaching in 1996.
Okay, so 22 years, if my math is correct. How many times do you think that you stopped a fight early?
So I have one time where Manuel Lopez, one of my boxers, this is another thing that was a very serious thing in my life because, you know, I never want to have a fighter injured in a fight that's a serious injury. And Manuel Lopez was fighting a Spanish fighter, and we were on the Casamayor Corrales card, and we were fighting for a WBC title. And it's about the seventh round. I was going to stop the fight, and then Chris Morris, one of my buddies who was sitting next to me, you know, pulls the towel out of my hand. I was going to throw the towel up, and I was going to get up on the canvas. We were, like, fighting back and forth, and then we let it go on. And then in the 12th round, he wants to stop the fight, and there's, like, a minute left. And I'm like, if he wants to throw the shit in, and I'm like, no way, you ain't going to stop it with 30 seconds left. Are you crazy? So, and then he ended up having a pneumophlebitis or something like that, is a punctured lung.
Wow.
And we ended up going into the hospital. He ended up exiting out of the hospital, which the doctor said, you can't do that. You can't go on a flight. He just wanted to see his newborn son. And they told us the risk. They said he's pretty much signing away on his life when we left the hospital, and I tried to talk him out of it. So I was just trying to be funny with him the whole time on the airplane, but I had Dr. Pressmax set up for us to go straight off the airplane into the other hospital, but we couldn't turn him away from that. And that was one of the hardest parts of my career. I actually missed Nate's fight, the only fight I missed, and he broke his hand in there, and I usually wrap their hands, so that hurt me. But I stayed in the hospital for a week with Perez, and that hurt me. I was in control of that. Me not making that decision to do it in the seventh round killed me, and I felt like I could have allowed someone to really get injured. So experience is everything, and how you handle the experience is everything, and you don't know what you don't know. So that was a key component that really helped me understand the damage an athlete can take through the courage and heart that these athletes have.
Transitioning to Justin Gaethje, I could talk about that. The psychology is fascinating to me about when to stop, how to stop, you know, the relationship afterwards, if it affects the relationship, whether they fully trust. It's just fascinating stuff. But I want to ask you about Justin Gaethje as well, because he is coming off that big win. And I remember back in April, after the loss to Poirier, people thought, all right, Gaethje is who he is right now. He is not going to evolve. He's that sort of reckless fighter who is a ton of fun to watch, but he's going to get hit a lot. And maybe this style is just catching up to him. Did you work on changing? I mean, obviously the performance against Vic was near flawless. Did you work on changing him? Is he a different fighter now? Is he more patient? How did you go from the guy who was taking those punches against Poirier and Alvarez to what we saw, you know, 9 or so days ago in Lincoln?
I would say the biggest difference is Justin. Justin's becoming wiser, and with age, you become wiser. He just has so much fun in there, and he's a sharp defensive fighter. He's a very guy who's knows how to roll with the punch and come back with a shot, with a punch. But he just has so much fun in there, and almost every time he's in a fight, he sits down on the stool and says, "Coach, this guy hits nothing like Palomino." He said that a few times to me. And he's just having so much fun in there. The key now is his sense of understanding that Gaethje is, to me, will be great if he's a spot fighter, if he fights in spots. He's the best at pressuring people and making people move their feet backwards and away from him, but he's got to find the right time to bring his combinations and his fighting style. It's got to be in spots, because when he fights just so hard, yes, he breaks him mentally, but he also gets lazy. And, you know, just like the kick that he threw on Poirier, where he threw the kick, nice hard kick, but then he relaxed. He sat back on his heels, and Dustin did a great job of catching that. And if Gaethje's sharp and he's balanced all the time, like the one thing in the Vic fight was his range. He outranged Vic, which was great. His little reset of his feet every time, it made Vic go, holy cow, I can't just touch this guy from long range. But he knew when to scoot his feet in. And my favorite part was he didn't lead with his punch, meaning that if you lead with your punch, you lead with your head. he led it. He got his feet in there first. He used the left hook to get his lead foot in and then set through the cross, which showed the leverage that Gaethje really has.
My favorite part of the fight, and it wasn't the fight itself, and I hope I'm not insulting anyone by saying this, was the footage that came out afterwards of your reaction. Your entire corner jumps up when he knocks out Vic, and you almost look like, you know, another day at the office, and it seemed like you were a little bit concerned for Vic. It's amazing footage. Have you seen this?
Yes, I did see that, yeah.
What is going through your mind as this is happening? How are you not, exploding like everyone else?
Because it is what it is. You know, it's, I'm excited, I'm happy, I'm, celebration is on the mind at the time, but someone just got KO'd very bad, and I could see the way he went down on his head was an issue. And then all of a sudden, too, is one thing that I've noticed. It's the hardest part for me to deal with when my athlete loses is the families that are there. It's hard. You know, when you're watching your son or your cousin or even your supporters who know you from teaching kickboxing classes, your supporters are there watching. So as I'm excited, I'm also humbled by what is going on in that situation. And the main thing I want to do is make sure that they're all right. And then we all, I like to celebrate behind doors. And I think the athletes should be instantly joyed. I believe that the family should be overjoyed and celebrating. But for me, man, it's peaks and valleys. If I'm getting super excited about a win, I'm going to get super, super down about a loss. But I know what, like, for instance, Vic, what he's going through at the moment, going in there, talking a lot of stuff and then, you know, cause and reaction. How is he going to deal with this at the moment? Is it going to change his life? Is he going to downfall from this point, or is he going to grow from it? I don't know. But just that time and that moment is so beneficial for us, but it's also, I respect all athletes and I respect what they do in there. It's humbling. So,
do you have a preference as to who Justin fights next?
Oh, I don't. That's the one thing that I never do is try to say, hey, this is who we want next. I feel like that's what the UFC has done very good compared to lightweight, compared to boxing, where you know high level guys get to choose who they're fighting and they can get tuna fights and these types of things. One thing that makes UFC unique is you fight who's in front of you, and I like that. I like to know that we've got a short period of time to be able to plant seeds of the opponent that we're facing, but how do we grow to handle this type of opposition? I don't care who we fight, really.
Fair enough, and I respect that. We spoke to Rose back in late June. She said that she was dealing with a neck issue. Do you have any update on how she's feeling?
The one thing with the neck issue is we don't know when it happened, you know. So having a C6 compression fracture is a major deal. But she's had these issues with her neck for two training camps, both of Ioana's training camps. And there was no, like, direct time where she was like, oh, I know when this happened. I actually have the exact same compression fracture, and I know exactly when I did it, but didn't find out till 2 years later. And the one thing is, man, you get these headaches, especially in the first couple of years after it happens. And she was getting headaches throughout her whole camp that are just, man, they wear you out. They annoy you. They fuck with your mental. And she's kind of just messing with that at the moment and trying to fix that. She's also, dealing with the situation that happened with the bus. And, you know, everybody has different perspectives of what's going on. I wasn't on the bus. I actually joked with her when they came back because I thought it was like, you know, nothing serious. I was like joking about it. She started crying and just falling. I was like, oh, my God, what really happened? And they were like, man, when the windows broke, it's almost sounded like a gunshot. And Rose comes from an abusive background. And that type of scenario, like the one thing is I feel like Rose is one of the most mentally strong people I've ever worked with, but she's also true to her senses and what she's feeling. That's why I enjoy coaching her. And she fears fighting more than anybody. She cries the day we're fighting, when we're about to walk out, she deals with this, but the way she faces it when she's in the moment, she's wonderful. But the hard part with her is she's always eating herself up mentally. And that's, I think right now she's dealing with that, and a lot of people laugh at it and say, oh, it's just this, it's just that. I mean, all I can say is you can't really say how it was unless you were there, and then also what perspective are you coming from? What traumatic situation does that bring up? So I think she needs the time off. She's had a lot of pressure fights that were close together, so I think you can see her back at the beginning of the year, and I look forward to helping her overcome that.
So do you feel like almost like the PTSD of the bus incident is still weighing on her?
Oh, yeah, completely. She doesn't leave her house.
Still?
I mean, she goes and does the media. Oh, yeah, she's like, if you just bring this the subject up, the promotion. The promotion of showing that bus isn't it for promoting the show that's coming up. Yeah, it's great promotion, sells tickets, but, I mean, it bothers me just on how much it bothers her. I mean, it instantly brings it up. We're visual people, and then when it brings up pictures of that same scenario, it was crazy. When that situation happened, I never heard her play the piano before. And we went down to the lobby, and we're walking to just go take a walk, and she was seeming super down. She got into this piano, pulled the curtain off, and just started playing the piano. I never heard her play the piano. And it was one of the coolest, like, you know, music brings vibration. It just makes you, dude, the way she was playing this piano, I could not believe how talented she was and what a release that was for her. I feel like that piano was the key to her going into that fight mentally strong, because it instantly helped her through that scenario. But, again, it's still there. Like, I was so worried about how she was going to perform in that fight. I really was.
Did you want her to pull out?
No. No, I want people to face their fears.
Wow.
I would, if she said she had to pull out, I would back her. But no, I wasn't going to plant a seed. I wasn't going to bring it up. I was going to, you know, do my job, and my job is there to help her perform, help her be mentally stable. But I'm not going to be a part of the distraction, and I do not want to plant a negative seed prior to a fight. Afterwards, we talked about it, but I didn't want to talk about it unless she needed to.
Do you feel like it's in poor taste to be using this to promote the fight?
Oh, yeah, it bothered me. I actually wrote something. I actually posted it and pulled it right back down. I was super bothered.
Wow.
For me, there's so many things that go into that scenario that you can get away with. And, you know, the things of, hey, how do you become more famous or make more money off a crazy situation like that? And the ones who were involved, from Ray Borg having glass in the eye. And yeah, I know a lot of people were like, oh, man, it was an easy way for you to pull out. Again, he lost money. Chesnya.
Yes,
he was on there. He would have had an opportunity to fight for the title. I mean, there's so many things that happened in that scenario. And from the WWE side, yeah, it could look like it's set up and that type of thing. That was a real situation. And the ones that who were involved, I think it's a poor taste of promotion, but is what it is. That's what they're great at. UFC is a promotional company, and I respect it from business ethics.
Are you worried that this is going to linger and continue to bother her?
Oh, yeah. But, again, the one thing is I look at everything as balance. Everybody has been through a traumatic thing, whether it's a death in a family, abuse, bullying. Everybody has faced some type of traumatic scenario. And the key is, those are the things that you can either carry you down and weigh you down and break you down, or those are the things that will make you better and greater in life if you face it. If you see the image and you run from it, and it takes a time process, you can't just instantly change that. You can't come back from rape and then a week later be good from it. It takes a process, and you almost have to reboot your system and work yourself through that. But the more you go through those types of things, you become callous to it. And I believe traumatic situations, if you learn how to look at it and respect them, then, you know, you can go on and be stronger and be aware.
So is she not at the gym?
Oh, yeah, she trains all the time.
But you said that she doesn't leave her home.
No, she leaves her – the gym is a mile away from her house.
Okay, so that's
– let me phrase that differently. It doesn't mean that she doesn't leave her – she'll go out and do a hike where there's no people.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
She's not going to be afraid of a bear running up on her. This is – doesn't go in public places.
Oh.
You know, when you're in a public place and there's people everywhere, that's, again, you're going to be like, oh, my God, what can happen here? You know? It's like if you're involved in a 9/11 bombing, it's very hard to be in a city scenario. Every time you get on an elevator, you're going to think of it, especially if you were up in the floors. And, again, that's what she means, is being around the fight scene. They said our security was going to be better. We're still riding the same shuttles. You know, I mean, it is what it is. So that's something that she's going to have to deal with, and I know she'll overcome it. But it's just time. I think she needed time to get away from that chaos. Two times in New York, you know. New York's awesome. You're in New York right now, so
yes.
If you grew up and live in New York, yeah, you know how to deal with that. But it's a chaotic situation if you're not used to that deep city scene, that New York state of mind. And by the way, hey, off subject, what kind of shoes you have. I'm actually disappointed I'm not on Skype because you always have them shoes.
Yes. Actually, you know what? For the show, I appreciate you noticing that, Trevor. I always do, right? Yes, I do appreciate that. I'm wearing these Nike SBs, these cherry blossom ones that are a little beat up, but they're actually kind of cool. You could check them out. Nike SB Cherry Blossom. They're a little bit pink, but as you can see, they're a little bit beat up. Well, you can't see this right now. You can see it on the replay. But it is great to have you on the show, Trevor, and I really appreciate the insight. I think that you are one of the finest coaches in the entire sport, and I thought it was really cool that that footage of you and Nate Marquardt interacting came up several years later when the whole Raquel Pennington thing came up, and you're having a phenomenal year with Rose and Justin and many others as well. And I know that you're coming out with this, or you have already come out with this line of training gear, right? With Justin.
Yes.
What's it called? Onyx, correct?
Onyx Sports. Yes. ONX Sports.
Amazing. Well, he spoke very highly of it last week on the program. I wish you the best of that. Of course, I wish you the best with all your fighters. Keep doing what you're doing, and thank you for being such a great sport and such a great coach in doing things the right way. I really admire what you've been doing as of late. So I won't take so long to have you back on the program again, but I just wanted to have you on to talk about all those things. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your time, buddy.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. There he is, Trevor Whitman, stopping by. In my opinion, one of the very best in the game. Grudge Training Center is the gym that he trains out of. He trains fighters out of in Colorado. And Justin Gaethje and Rose Namajunas are probably at the top of his list, but he's got some other great ones as well. And he's been doing this for quite some time. Pat Barry, been a part of his stable. Shane Carwin, Nate Marquardt, as I said. For a while, there was sort of a sister thing going on with Jackson Wink. And so guys like Rashad Evans and George St. Pierre were working with him as well. Roy Nelson, Matt Mitrione, Cerrone, Todd Duffy, Melvin Gillard. The list goes on and on. So great stuff there from Trevor Whitman. And, it's heartbreaking to hear what Rose is going through. And I know a lot of people will roll their eyes and say, oh, get over it. But that is a real thing. And I hope that people can respect that. All right, let's move along. Speaking of UFC 229, it is rapidly approaching. October 6th, Las Vegas, one of the biggest nights in UFC history. Everyone's going to be there, tons of fans, shaping up to be one of the biggest nights in terms of business is concerned, maybe number two behind the debut at Madison Square Garden. And one thing that I've always thought more promotions should do is take a page out of pro wrestling. When there's a big event, a WrestleMania, so to speak, you see all these other promotions the night before hold events, two nights before hold events. We've seen it a little bit here and there, but it's not a common occurrence. Well, someone is smart enough to do that at UFC 229 during UFC 229 fight week. And here to talk to us about that is the one and only Uriah Faber, our good friend, the California Kid. Uriah, how are you?
What's up, Ariel? How are you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you joining us. First time on the new show, but we've obviously been talking for quite some time, and this is an exciting thing going on. And I think a lot of people are curious as to what you're going to announce, because just a couple of days ago, you posted a thing on Instagram. Oh, I still get USADA, drug test just in case, with a wink, wink emoji. By the way, before we get into the announcement, why do you do that? Why do you keep letting them come into your life? Isn't it annoying?
A wink, wink emoji?
Yeah.
I didn't do that, did I?
You did some kind of emoji. You said USADA's still coming, and just in case, or something like that, right?
Yeah, that's right. well, first off, I've never done any drugs, so I it's not that big. I mean, every once in a while, I get woke up at 6 in the morning or whatever, which is fine, but I don't have to do any lifestyle change aside from that. And, you never know what could happen. I'm a 39-year-old guy, and if an opportunity knocks, you always want to be ready. If you take yourself out of USADA, then you have to wait like a form because of things that have happened in the past with, I think, what's his name? Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
You have to wait 4 months before you can compete again. So, I just always want to stay ready. I'm still in great shape. I'm in practice every day, hanging out and having a good time. But I'm competing here coming up, and I'm pumped about it. And I don't know if many people know about it. It's pretty big in Japan. It's an event called Quintet. And Sakuraba, the legend, UFC Hall of Famer, and you know, Pride and MMA legend started this awesome, in his own fashion, competition, which is a 5-on-5 competition, and you have to weigh under a certain amount of weight, 943 pounds, I'm not sure what that is in kilos, and we're putting a team together and going to go compete against a bunch of other studs. I think Josh Barnett is on, Sakuraba's on that team, there's a Polaris team, there's a couple other teams, and it's a really fun dynamic, so I'm pumped about it. They called us and wanted me to put a team together, and I'm like, do it, man. Jiu-jitsu is what I'm doing to stay in shape these days anyways, and I feel like I'm getting better at it, so it's time to go.
Okay, so this is very exciting. Let me fill in some of the holes here. October 5th, Las Vegas, Orleans Arena, the night before UFC 229, so tons of people are going to be looking for something to do. This promotion called Quintet, which is led by the great Kazushi Sakuraba. It's kind of, if you're a pro wrestling fan, I know you love pro wrestling, right? It's sort of like Survivor Series. It's 5-on-5, right? Elimination style. This is amazing.
You're right about that, but I mean, I don't love pro wrestling, but I know you probably do.
Oh, who doesn't? So this is what it means. You mentioned, so I was told under 950 pounds. You heard 943?
Yeah, something like that.
All right.
So, I mean, I guess that matters.
Yeah, well, it does matter, because what that means is you have five people on your team. The combined weight of the team can't be above, let's say, 945 for the sake of this. So it's not like you can stack the deck with a bunch of heavyweights, right? It has to be sort of equally distributed. And two guys from each team start off competing on the mat until either one is eliminated by submission. The winner then stays on to face the next member of the opposing team, or the 8-minute time limit expires and both guys are eliminated. This process plays out. I was just going to read the rules here quickly. This process plays out until all five members of one team are eliminated, handing victory to the other team. The winning team then all return for the finale match against the winning team of the other semifinal. That's incredible. This is fun.
Yeah, no, this is so much fun. When they first started talking to me about it, and I've had a bunch of grappling matches set up, and I've had to put them on halt because, you know, I had one that was going to be in UK that was the same day as Sage and Chad's fight. And when this opportunity came up, I started watching on Fight Pass, and I was like, dude, this is crazy, man. It looked like so much fun. And you can get mismatches in there, so I could go up against, like, a Josh Barnett, for example. And if there's 44 pounds difference, so for me and Josh Barnett, I weigh 158, 161 pounds, and he's 250 or whatever he weighs, it would only be a four-minute match. And if he can't submit me, then we're both eliminated. Or I could try to submit him also, and I can eliminate him and go on, but it makes for fun. It's like, it really is like human chess. You know, we always say fighting is like human chess, but this new little dynamic is funny. And I love that Sakuraba's idea. That guy's a martial arts genius. I love his spirit when it comes to mixed martial arts.
Now, word on the street is, so there's going to be a Team Alpha Male. There's going to be five members. You're going to be a part of it. I do believe Dustin Akbari is going to be a part of it. But word on the street is, Uriah, that a young man named Chris Holdsworth is going to be a part of this as well. Is that accurate?
You know what? I just got off the phone with Chris.
Yes?
About it, and he said how much money's involved.
Uh-oh.
And so I just basically pitched him on it. And so I would love to see him compete. You know, I mean, we're stacking the deck with smaller guys, but I would love to see Chris. I mean, he's a killer in the Jits world, and we haven't seen him compete for a while. So that would be awesome if we can get him out there to do it. We've got bringing in a guy, Fabio Prado, is helping me put the team together. He's our jiu-jitsu coach alongside Dustin Akbari, and he's got a guy that is trained with him on occasion, Anton Jode, who's a heavyweight for us, and we're trying to fill in the blanks between which guys we're going to put in. So I think, you know, it becomes really strategic, because if we have a guy, I mean, I would love to have even like a Chad Mendez. Nobody's going to submit that guy, but I'm not sure if he's going to be able to submit some of these heavyweights and whatnot. So we could stack it with heavier guys, or some mid-level guys, or a bunch of lightweight guys. It really makes you think.
Let me run down some of the other names. Team Sakuraba has Sakuraba himself, Josh Barnett, Marco Souza, and Roberto Souza. They've got one more to add. Team Polaris has Craig Jones, Gregor Gracie, Marcin Held, Dan Strauss, and one more TBA. Then there's Team 10th Planet, and they won quintet number two. Gio Martinez, Richie Martinez, PJ Bark, Adam Sacknov, and Amir Allen. And then the fourth team is Team Alpha Male. This is exciting stuff. All happening one night only, October 5th, the night before UFC 229. I feel like you're going to get a lot of fans who are in town for Conor versus Khabib who are going to come check out your event because they're going to want to do something. It's brilliant.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, I'm excited to compete, man. I've been itching to compete. I did that one – I had that one grappling match, and I had prior obligations. I was on a boat trip with Chad Mendes, Fins and Feathers, and then I was filming that movie for Rampage, and then – you know, I basically didn't have a fair chance to train, and I still had an amazing match with Paulo Miao. We had, you know, six overtimes, and you know, Chael Sonnen put that event on in Oregon, and I've been itching to compete ever since then, so this will be fun. I might get to mix it up with some heavyweights. I was curious how I'd do with some heavier weight guys, because, you know, in practice, it's a tit-for-tat. Like, some guys are stronger, some guys are slower. You know, speed matters in jiu-jitsu, too. So I'm excited to get in there, and I'm glad there's no heel hooks, because you can rip somebody's knee out of socket if you're going with mismatched sizes on that front, you know.
Now, what about the heavyweight component here? Like, are you going to look to, you know, there's not a lot of heavyweights that train at Team Alpha Male, one of the greatest gyms of all time as far as lightweight fighters are concerned, but are we looking to maybe get a hired gun heavyweight to join the squad for one night only?
Yeah, I mentioned the guy's name, Anton Jode. That's one of Fabio's guys that he's bringing to the table for us. And Fabio Prado is one of our jiu-jitsu instructors. He's not going to be able to compete, but he's a bigger guy. And we have some bigger guys that are on the team that you probably haven't heard of. But we're trying to put that together. So Anton Jode is going to represent for us.
Okay.
He's 235.
Oh, wow, okay.
He's an Olympic wrestler from Brazil and also a black belt in jiu-jitsu. So we're bringing him in. And then it's Dustin Akbari and myself talking about Holdsworth, if he wants to do it or not. You know, and then we have a couple other guys that are options for the fifth guy. And we're excited, man. This is going to be a good time.
For something like this, do you have to train a lot, or is it just kind of like, okay, let's just go and do it? Like, are you actually specifically training for it like you would for a fight?
Well, I train jiu-jitsu probably every other day. I mean, that's my favorite way of getting in shape. And I even sparred a little bit, you know, boxing the last couple months, and just here and there. When I get in with Song Yadong and some of these young guys, did a round with Cody before his fight. But for me, it just turns the notch up on jiu-jitsu. You know, I'll probably do a little bit of strength and conditioning, but I'm always in shape. I don't think an 8-minute match or I mean, you could, in theory, you submit everyone, you could go all the way through five guys, but I think that's pretty slim to none on my shoulders. But I'm going to be getting in shape and doing a lot of jiu-jitsu, going with different sized guys and having fun.
Speaking of Cody, again, another tough night for him against TJ Dillashaw. Did that one sting? How did you take that one in? Given, you know, like this drama, and how did you react to it?
Well, the drama's kind of subsided as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the separation's been gone for a long time with you know, how long ago TJ left the team and everything else. But, yeah, of course that stings. It stings for Cody. I mean, he seems to be in a great spot. You know, he loves being a dad, and he's pretty upbeat and seems to be doing well. But, yeah, it stings. It's just motivation to get these next guys going, and hopefully Cody gets a fire back to get back in the gym. And you know, he's only 27 years old, and he can decide to reclimb that ladder when he's ready. But, yeah, just a motivation to get these next generation going. And you know, of course, you never like your guys to lose. But it is what it is. It's the real world in a tough sport. It wasn't the smartest, you know, fight. It got into an emotional state, I think, for Cody right away. He tasted a little blood early, it's kind of a repeat of the first fight. So you got to learn from that, absolutely.
Are you hopeful? Do you want to maybe clear the air with TJ now that this is over? Do you want to go back to how things were? Or do you think that will never happen?
How things were?
Yeah,
I mean, that's a far stretch.
Why?
You know, I've got a. I mean, how things were.
Like when you guys were teammates.
Shifting. Yeah, nothing says like getting passing like moving on, you know. And I think I've moved on a long time ago, and I'm sure he's moved on a long time ago. I've got plenty of good friends, and he's got his surroundings as well. So I'm not trying to like rekindle old relationships or anything like that. But you know, I'll be cordial to the guy, absolutely, and. You know, and it is what it is, but I'm not trying to, like, rekindle a relationship, no.
Okay. How do you feel about the state of the team right now? You know, there was the Bang era and the Kampman era, and I know Buchholz left. Do you feel like we're in a good spot right now with the team, with the coaching staff, with the crop of fighters that you have? Mendez coming back looking great, Sage with a phenomenal win recently as well. How do you feel about the state of the team?
Yeah, I'm super excited about the team. I think, you know, it's funny because – It's a great time to it's a great time for anybody who has anything negative to say when a big high profile fight is lost. But you know, our team is an incredible place. Sorry, getting another call. It's an incredible place right now. We're excited about some of these young guys like Song Yadong and Sage and there's a kid named Cleo Romero that I've mentioned quite a bit, and Alex Munoz and Chris Gonzalez. On top of guys like, you know, the staple guys, Chad coming back and, you know, Rick Glenn coming off a big win. And, you know, Feely was pretty upset. He felt he won that last fight. He's hungrier than ever now. So I think the team is an incredible spot. The addition to Lee Kemp has been great for us. I don't know if you know who Lee Kemp is, but he's one of the most successful wrestlers in the history of the U.S., and his mentality, he coached the 2008 Olympics to a victory, and his mentality is just like, you know, life accomplishments are great. We've got a couple other stand-up coaches that have really started to shine, Mike Malott, and I've got a kid out of Russia, Slava, who's, you know, a couple-time world champion kickboxer who's been contributing. We've got another kickboxing world champ from Brazil, who's in town. So it's been a good time, and those losses, especially the high profile ones where everyone's watching, you know, can be a kick to the gut. But you know, you don't judge your own ability on someone else's performance. It's just not something that you do. So our guys are motivated and excited, and we're pretty positive about how everything's going.
There was a lot of drama when a protege of yours, Angelo Trevino, fought Mr. Van Zandt, Austin Vanderfort. What went wrong there with Angelo, and they booked it so perfect. I mean, the UFC says they don't like the drama. I mean, they couldn't have scripted anything better than that with yeah. with Paige's fiance. How did you feel being a part of that, and what went wrong with Angelo? He seemed to start off well, but then of course got caught in the second.
Yeah, that was all conditioning. You know, it looked like you know, for some of these guys, Angelo Trevino, and I've been having to give some hard lessons to these younger cats. Angelo Trevino has been with us for a very long time. And, you know, there's kind of a list of guys that have done that, started since they're kids. And then we have guys that come in from the other parts of the world that are, you know, paying to be here and won't miss a practice. And then you have other guys that are kind of like, feel like, you know, at 24, Angelo's been here since he's 14, 13, feel like, you know, things have slowed down, gets a job, this and that. So we had to get him into practice from the job for his big opportunity, which he deserves because he's put in so much time, but the conditioning caught up with him. I mean, he almost finished. I mean, it was could have almost been stopped. Vanderfort showed a lot of heart and stuck it out in the first round, and the fatigue got to Angelo, which is a great lesson for these guys. You got to be training all year round. You can't, you know, let opportunities slip because the real world sets in, you know. Get a job, sure, do this, but you got to show up, and you got to be training all year round. So I think that caught up with them, on top of Austin being a tough cat. I mean, he went through some real adversity, and was able to overcome a guy that, you know, almost had him out in the first round.
I didn't get my save the date yet for the wedding. Did you get it yet?
What's that?
The wedding. The Vanderfort Van Zandt wedding. I didn't get my save the date yet. Did you get it?
I don't think so. I haven't checked my mail in about 13 years. That's someone that usually does that. It's probably a pile. It's probably a pile, but I'll have to go and check again. But no, I didn't get a save the date. They're close on making that happen.
It's like in a couple of weeks. It's like end of September.
Yeah, so I didn't get to save the date. Nope.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I don't feel as bad now. Quintet.
Yeah.
October 5th, Las Vegas, the night before UFC 229. By the way, you can get tickets right now at quintet-fight.com, and then later on this week over at ticketmaster.com. 5-on-5, elimination style, submission, grappling. You got Team Sakuraba, Team Polaris, Team 10th Planet, and for the very first time, Team Alpha Male. If Holdsworth doesn't want in, I'll go in. Could you imagine?
Yeah, let's get you in there. Yeah, we would have an Olympic basketball player.
Yes, Jewish Olympic, by the way.
Jewish Olympic basketball player on the team. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. All right.
And how's this show going, man? How's the new show? I need to catch up, man. Change is hard, isn't it?
It is hard.
I gotta find all the new ways to keep up to date with you.
You and I both. I'm sure Mr. Faber has been a loyal watcher, listener since we moved over, right? He's keeping you up to date.
I'm sure he has. Yeah, I get a little Ariel said this or said that on occasion. So
that's my guy.
Hey, by the way, I need to get you on my podcast.
Oh,
we launched it.
Okay,
and I mean, I was stockpiling those podcasts for a little while, just meeting interesting people and whatnot.
Okay,
but
anytime
I would love to be able to turn you around and
please
and ask questions around. and figure out how you made it to the Jewish Olympics.
Yes,
and
anytime
how you became the. You're undefeated and
yep.
Reporters of the year for
yep.
the eight
in a row.
The MMA awards,
yep.
Eight in a row.
Yep.
You know, hear about the kids and the family and how come you always shun your brother's
yep.
successful business,
yep.
out of jealousy or whatever it is.
It's his birthday today. Happy birthday to David.
Hey, David, happy birthday, buddy.
There you
don't
go.
Let your brother, don't let your brother keep you under a cover, guy.
All right.
It's your time to shine now.
Anytime. Just set it up with my assistant and we'll make it happen.
All right, I'll have my people call your people.
Yeah, well, I was just doing it to
wow.
you because I always have to set it up with your assistant, the great Candy. But, no, I don't have an assistant. You know my number. I would be honored. Honestly, I would be honored.
Okay, and so that was a joke.
Oh.
I honestly would miss this conversation if I didn't have someone else put in my schedule because I'm going a million miles per hour.
I know.
Yeah, you know how it is. But it's good to talk to you, buddy.
Thank
don't
you, Uriah.
The bad guy.
I will be there October 5th. I look forward to being there in person and watching it all unfold. Quintet, I appreciate you doing this.
You got it, buddy. My pleasure.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. There he is, the one and only Uriah Faber, the California kid himself. Again, October 5th, Orleans in Las Vegas, the night before UFC 229. It's called Quintet, Sakuraba's promotion, and it airs on Fight Pass. I've seen it before. It's a lot of fun. It's very much like the Survivor Series. 5-on-5. If you lose, you're out. And there are some big names involved. Faber, Sakuraba, Josh Barnett. I thought Chris Holdsworth, but now it seems as though he's a TBA. Gregor Gracie, Marcin Held, to name a few. I think that's great. They need to do this. This is like when Ring of Honor has a show the night before WrestleMania or what's the other? Evolve, right? Like if I was Invicta, I would try to plan. They did it a couple times. They did it once in Vegas before, what was it, 189. They did it before 184 in Los Angeles. You got to do this sort of thing. It's very important. Try to get the audience to come to you. All right, so that's to come in October in Las Vegas. But again, this weekend at UFC 228, one of the big storylines, we had Tyron Woodley on the show last week. He said, if Darren Till does not make weight, I am not fighting the backup Kamaru Usman. This made all kinds of headlines. And so I wanted to talk to Usman himself and see what he thought of it. He's joining us now on the phone. Kamaru, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Ariel. How are you doing?
It's great to talk to you as always. So did you hear Tyron's comments last week? And if so, what do you make of them?
Yeah, I heard him. I heard the comments. But at the end of the day, all I can do is control myself. I have to do what I decided to do and what I was contracted to, which is show up and make weight. That's my job. Everything else is out of my control, whether Tyrant, something. I mean, and at the end of the day, lots of variables, lots of possibilities could have happened. So all I can do is worry about myself and show up and do my job.
Could you tell us, Kamaru, about the timeline of events here? Because I remember you were on the show around a month and a half or so ago, and you said that you were offered a fight against Colby Covington November 30th in Las Vegas. And then this situation came about. They booked Woodley versus Till, and then the word gets out that you're the backup fighter. Did they approach you with this idea? Like, do you have an official contract that says you're the backup fighter, you have to make weight, and if Darren Till misses weight or someone misses weight, you're getting slotted in?
That's what's been discussed was, just that whether, Till, and it's not, although a lot of people have this misconception that they're always just Darren Till. It's not just Darren Till. You know, that's a tough thing that I've had to do is I've had to train for two guys and not even knowing if I will fight.
Yeah.
Or not. So that's the crazy part about it. You know, a lot of the guys are making a big deal of whether it's I have to switch a style and worry about this other opponent. I have to worry about two separate guys and make weight, and there's not a guarantee whether I will fight or not. So, it's something that was contract. We talked about it. Me and my management, we agreed that this is something that we should do because lots of variables happen. Lots of things happen during fight week. I mean, should we go back to Brooklyn where Khabib went through what a variable number of opponents within hours until he eventually got a fight? So all I can do is worry about myself, prepare myself. I've trained to be the champion. I'm ready to be the champion, and we'll see what happens September 7th.
Has it been hard to get motivated knowing that you may be training for nothing, that there's not going to be a fight at the end of this?
That's a tough one, Ariel. It's not. I wouldn't say it's hard to be motivated because being the best at this is what motivates me. And training each and every day, I get better and better, and I get closer and closer to being the best at that. I feel that I have the skills and the tools to be the best, which is why I've been stating it lately. So, it wasn't hard to be motivated. I mean, it does suck with the fact that knowing that, man, I have to worry about this guy and I have to worry about that guy. I have to train for a southpaw and I have to train for orthodox. Different fighters. And on top of it, I have to make weight. I mean, as we know, I'm not the smallest welterweight on the roster. I still have to go through the pains of making the weight just like everybody else. But, it was just something, it was just a feeling that I had. I just felt that, hey, this is something that I should do. And that's what a champion does.
Do you feel on this Tuesday, here we are, like, what, 3 days before the weigh-ins, do you feel like your number is going to get called? Do you feel like you're going to fight on Saturday?
I don't know. I'm not hoping anything bad. Like, I'm not wishing Darren Till doesn't make weight. No, this is, he was given the opportunity. I want him to make weight, and I want him to maximize that opportunity. I want Tyron Woodley to be able to go out there and defend his belt for, a fourth or consecutive time. I'm not going in there wishing bad on anyone. You know, you just don't know what God has in store or what the plan is. So I'm just being prepared. As I always say to myself, luck is when opportunity meets preparation. So I'm stayed prepared, and I'm prepared, and I'm ready to be the champion when that opportunity presents itself.
How does it work in terms of compensation for something like this?
You had to talk to my management about that. I don't know. They had that conversation and talked to me about it. I said, yeah, let's do it. So here we are.
You feel like you're being properly compensated?
No.
Why not?
But then again, I don't feel like, I mean, to properly compensate me is to pay me for fighting or something like that. But, it is what it is. It's a situation that I decided to go through with. So I'm a man of my word. I said I was going to do it, and I'm going to do it.
Here's the unique thing about all of this. you get the impression that the winner of this fight is going to fight Colby Covington, yet you're the guy on standby for the title fight. Normally, you would be the next guy up, you know, if this fight goes through. So what happens to you on September 9th when this fight is done? It happens, and it seems, okay, let's say Tyron Woodley wins, and now we get Woodley versus Covington. Where does that leave you? It feels like you're the bridesmaid, and you don't get a chance to be the bride.
You're exactly right, Ariel. That's something that, you know, my management has to go back and we have to talk with the organization because, Colby Covington had his opportunity. He had his chance. And for whatever reason, he didn't disclose right away. That was him. He chose not to go through with the fight. He kept saying was, I'm the champion now. We'll fight when I'm ready and this and that. So, hey, he had his opportunity. I'm sitting here. I haven't even lost a round in the octagon yet. I don't know. This should have been my fight in the first place. I'm from Dallas, Texas. That's my hometown. Why am I not the one headlining against Tyron Woodley? But, you know, it's a conversation that my management has to go back and have with the organization. But, hey, I'm the guy who stepped up. I'm showing up. I'm going to be prepared. If something happens, I'll be there to clean it up.
Have you been told if this fight goes through and you don't get the opportunity that you're the number one contender? Like, has there been any promise made to you about what's next if you're the good soldier who's on standby and makes weight?
No, we haven't talked about that. Once again, I let my management, you know, deal with the communications, you know, because I'm on the other end. My management's the middle guy. They handle all that situation. That's what I pay them for. And they do a pretty good job of that. My job is just to do whatever I agree to, which is make weight September 7th and prepare to be the champion September 8th should anything go wrong.
What do you think happens if Darren Till misses weight, drastically can't fight, you make weight, Woodley makes weight, and he's like, nah, I'm not fighting Kamaru Usman on 24 hours notice?
That's the tricky part. You'd have to let the organization deal with that. I mean, it's been some crazier things have happened. I mean, crazier things have happened, and hey, somehow we get through them. So, I mean, Yoel Romero didn't make weight 2 title fights in a row. So, You never know.
So now you're going to Dallas today, right?
Yes, sir.
And is this just
I'll be flying out pretty soon.
Like a regular fight week for you? You're doing all the same thing as though, like, mentally you have to prepare for a weight cut and then a fight on Saturday. You're trying not to pretend like you're a backup. Or are you?
Absolutely. I'm trying to at least put my, especially if this turns out to be I'm fighting for the world title. I mean, I'm trying to simulate that as much as possible in my mind, not let outside thoughts or different things creep in. So, it's hard. It is very hard because you're basically walking towards the unknown here, and you have no idea what's going to happen on the other end of this. So, I'm just, you know, I'm trying to stay as positive as possible and just go out there and do what I signed up to do.
I know you're saying you're not hoping for anything bad to happen, but isn't part of staying positive hoping that you get that call as well?
If that's what the plan is, then that's what the plan is. I mean, Uriah Hall prepared to make weight and fight Vitor Belfort in St. Louis. Unfortunately, something happened. Zach Cummins prepared to fight his fight, was cutting weight for that. Unfortunately, something happened. I remember there was a situation where Tim Means was cutting weight in the sauna, was walking out, and something happened. I don't wish bad on anyone, but if that's what the plan is, that's what it's set in stone. I am someone who believes that we all have a path to walk in this life, and if that's what it's written, that I would be the champion September 8th, then that's what God has in store. I don't want to be the one to say, oh, you know, God has it in store for me that I'm going to get the opportunity to be the champion September 8th. And then I'm like, oh, well, you know what? I didn't cut weight. I'm not ready. I wasn't prepared. And that opportunity passes me by. So all I can do is be ready. And if the opportunity, if my lane opens up, I'm going to run to that motherfucker.
Any hard feelings towards Tyron after what he said last week?
No, absolutely not. I mean, Tyron's trying to protect his title, which has provided him the lifestyle right now that he's accustomed to. So, you know, without that title, things change.
It's a big difference from challenger to champion. So that's what he's trying to protect. He's going to do everything in his power to protect that.
But why do you say protect that title? Because you're saying that by fighting you, he's putting that title in jeopardy, or if he's taking the non-title fight, then he just... What do you mean by that?
Ariel. I mean, let's be honest. What do you think? The biggest reason he says it, why would he switch? He doesn't want to switch from mentally preparing to fight a 6'2 southpaw that fights long, can't really wrestle that well. And then you go to a switch stance striker that's ambidextrous, can hurt you with either hand, can out-wrestle you, has cardio for days, shows no weaknesses. I don't think that's the transition that he wanted to make. So that's why he said he's saying no. So, hey, I mean, I'm not sure. Whatever his reasoning is, me and him haven't discussed that. He hasn't talked to me about that. He didn't tell me about that. So, you know, I don't know what's going through his mind. But if I was him, I mean, I wouldn't be the guy that you fight on 24-hour notice. That's for damn sure.
Now, what happened to November 30th against Covington? Is that dead?
Come on, Ariel.
What?
It's Covington. It's Colby Covington. I don't know where he's hiding. He's hiding somewhere. That fight was offered. I instantly said yes. And then they got back to us and said, yeah, that's not going to happen.
Well, when you saw him at the White House with the president and Dana White and that belt, what did you think of that?
I didn't think anything of it. All I know is if it's in the cards September 8th and I'm champion, I'm taking my belt to the White House. I better get my invite to the White House, period.
You want to go meet the president with the belt?
What? I want my invite. I want my invite. If Colby Covington got that invite with the fake belt, I want the invite with the real belt.
Wow.
Why wouldn't I be invited? That's what I want to know. Why wouldn't I be invited?
Well,
that's the bigger question.
If you are invited, would you go?
We'll discuss that at another time.
I see what you're trying to do here. You're trying to turn the tables on the prez.
We'll discuss that another time, Ariel.
You just want equal invites for all.
Hey, isn't that's the society we live
yes.
in? Now. Equal rights for everybody. So why not me?
Does that not give you pause, though? Here's the guy who they said is going to get stripped on September 8th, but there he is with the president and the free world, and also the president of the company and that same belt. Does that not make you think this guy? And we're looking at the photo right over here. Does that not make you think that this guy is going to be the champion still on September 9th and is going to get the unification belt?
No, I don't. I don't worry about him. I don't think about him. I don't care about him. I don't worry about him. You know, when the opportunity is presented to me to stand, to be able to potentially stand across the cage from him and put hands on him, I always accept each and every time. I've never once turned it down, but he's turned it down several times. So, you know, it doesn't pay no mind to me. What I'm chasing is greatness. I'm chasing that gold belt to be able to elevate myself and my family to a different lifestyle. So that's it. You know, Colby Covington or whoever else is in the way of that, they will be dealt with accordingly.
Last thing for you, and again, I appreciate you doing this before you head out. If the fight does come to fruition, Darren Till versus Tyron Woodley, who are you picking?
Man, I don't know. I think it's a tough one. It's a challenging fight. Obviously, everyone knows Darren Till is a big, strong guy. He's very good with that left hand. He's very good at controlling the distance and controlling the range. But Tyron Woodley's got a lot of power as well, and he can wrestle. You know, that's one thing we really haven't seen Darren Till is being tested with the grappling aspect of the game. So, you know, it's whoever can implement their game plan the best is going to be the victor. I don't really care. All I care about is that gold belt and getting my hands around it. So whoever else is holding it by the time I get to it is going to be dealt with.
Appreciate you doing this, Kamaru. Good luck this weekend in Dallas with the weight cut. You know, I hope things work out in a favorable way for you, whether it's on September 8th or afterwards. Kudos on being a professional and going about your business the right way. Thank you very much for doing this, and hopefully we'll see you out there in Dallas.
All right. Thank you, Ariel.
All right. We'll see you soon. There he is, Kamaru Usman, stopping by. Very interesting, saying he hopes to get the invite from the White House, but then when asked, will he accept said invite, will he go? That is interesting. All right. Great stuff there. So that's the main event story. And like I said, I'll be there on Thursday. We're doing a pre-fight show on ESPN Plus on Friday. Also a post-fight show covered for Media Day. So we'll have you covered. The post-fight show, by the way, is live. So immediately following the main event, Woodley, Usman, who knows what's going to happen. And why do I get the feeling, and I'll be doing a weigh-in show, stream, if you will, on Friday morning. But why do I get the feeling something wacky is going to happen? It just always seems to happen. And there is so much pressure on Till to make weight, and there's so much pressure on the UFC for Till to make weight because they put him in this spot. I feel like regardless of what happens on Saturday, his days of fighting at welterweight are numbered. Like, you just look at the guy. He's constantly, you know, drained and complaining about the weight cut. He's not happy doing this. I'll be very surprised if this time next year and a half, he's still fighting at 170. All right. One of the big stories last week, my friends, was the budding feud between YouTube star Logan Paul and the one and only Sage Northcutt. Now, I've wanted to have Sage on the show for quite some time since his last fight. Remember, he was on the show on the Monday after, but then some news emerged regarding Sage, and I wanted to check in with him. So once this Logan Paul thing emerged as well, I thought this would be a good time to say hello to our old friend Sage. He joins us now on the phone. Sage, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks, Mr. Helwani.
It's great to talk to you as always, Sage. Good to have you on the show. Okay, so let's start with this Logan Paul thing, because last week on the program, we talked to Jimmy Manuel, who was sitting there ringside. Everyone was buzzing about Logan Paul versus KSI. What a great success it was. Sold out the Manchester Arena. They sold all these pay-per-views online. I mean, really telling everyone, showing everyone how to get it done, especially for the youngsters. And then he starts putting out this stuff about UFC, and there you are, calling him out, saying that you'd be happy to put hands. Where did this come from, Sage? This was very unlike you.
Oh, you know what? I wasn't calling him out. I was just kind of making a tweet out there. But I think it's great. I think any fighter fighting in the UFC would take the opportunity to take a fight against a YouTuber and stand to make several million dollars. So I think it's really cool. And for Logan Paul to want to fight in the UFC, that's a compliment for all of us UFC fighters, someone that wants to be like us and go out there and be able to fight like us. So I think it's pretty cool.
Are you familiar? Like, are you a fan of his? Are you someone who has watched his videos in the past?
Oh, you know, I've seen like a few little clips before on like YouTube or stuff scrolling through Instagram before. But yeah, I've heard that he has a lot of followers on YouTube, and that's super neat.
Did you watch his boxing match against KSI?
No, you know what? I didn't. But I went back and saw some stuff of him fighting KSI. And KSI is also another YouTuber, is that right?
That is correct, yes.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty neat how they both fought. And I thought that was pretty cool, them getting out there. And it takes guts to get out there and fight a boxing ring or an MMA fight or for the UFC or whatever it is. So I think that's pretty cool.
And so on August 29th, Logan tweeted, "The thought of securing a fight in the UFC is exciting. Could finally use my wrestling background, but I hear some other celebrities/athletes want to catch these hands first." And then you came out of nowhere and said, "Let me know when you want to catch these hands." And then everything exploded. And then he wrote, "Bring it on, Northbutt." What did you make of his reply?
Oh, man. I thought that was funny, Northbutt. That was pretty clever. So I told him, I said, "It has begun."
Yes.
It's funny, but... But yeah, you know, I heard that they fought at 190 pounds, right? So if he were to fight someone, and he, as he says, wants to fight someone in the UFC, I'm young. We kind of look like brothers almost. We're both,
yes,
both athletic. Yeah, both have blonde hair. It's kind of funny. And I know he had a little bit of wrestling in high school, so that's pretty cool. But I'm not too big for him. Definitely don't outweigh him by too much. So I think that'd be a pretty cool one. That'd be a lot of fun.
And so this is you tweeting, Sage. This isn't someone tweeting on your behalf?
Oh, no way. Yeah, that was me tweeting. Yes, sir.
Wow. I was like, wow, Sage, this is unlike you. But I liked it. It was fun. It was great. Now, he's a big star. I mean, he's got almost 5 million followers, I think almost 10 on Twitter, and then several million on Instagram. This is a big deal. Since this happened, have people reached out to you? Is there any movement on this idea?
Well, you know what? I guess we're going to see what happens. But I know that Uriah Faber, Mr. Faber, my coach, was talking with Logan Paul. So I guess we'll see if it gets going or what's going to happen with that. But I know he was speaking with him about it.
Oh, my gosh. We just spoke to Uriah earlier in the day. I didn't ask him about this because I was waiting to talk to you about
it.
Yes. I blew it.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Could you tell us what happened? We need to get Uriah back on the phone. Could you tell us what happened?
No, you know what? I still need to talk to Mr. Faber about it. All I know is that he spoke to him about it and talked about a few things. So, you know what? I guess we both have to find out.
Oh, my gosh.
Funny.
This is an actual thing? There's actual discussions between Uriah Faber and Logan Paul? That's what you're saying?
Yes, sir. There definitely was. So
holy smokes.
Yep. So I guess we'll both have to find out. And if I find out, I'll have to let you know.
Okay. Now, Sage, I have to ask you this. Your last fight in the UFC, that was your last fight on your current contract?
Yes, sir, it was.
Now, where do things stand?
Well, you know what? I think the UFC, for the UFC to re-sign me, I think that would be something that's great. I don't see why they wouldn't try to offer something, so I guess I'm waiting to find out. But I think me being young, I've only truly had 1 year total of actual real MMA training, if you look at it. So I consider my MMA training starting the day that I set foot in Uriah Faber's gym, because now I'm at a camp constantly. I'm not in college studying to be an engineer, and I'm getting to put all my time and effort to study my martial arts to be the best fighter I can be. So really, I've only had 1 year of experience. I've improved greatly. So no matter if it's the UFC or if it's Bellator or it's ONE FC, whatever league it is, I'm going to be the champion. I'm trained to be the champion. I become the champion in whatever I put my mind to. So I believe I will be the champion. I think the UFC will be able to realize that, and I guess we'll see what they say.
Okay, so are you a free agent? Like, can you talk to any organization right now?
You know what? I am a free agent, yes, sir. I'm not sure how it works underneath what my contract says or anything, but yes, I am a free agent right now, and I know that going to other leagues, for instance, like Bellator, if it's ONE FC or wherever it might be, that guys that are friends of mine, like, for instance, Rory McDonald or people that fought for the UFC, like Machida, they're making double or if not triple what they were making fighting for the UFC. So I guess we're gonna see what happens, but I know that, like, them, for instance, are making more than what a lot of the guys fighting for the title in the UFC make.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll have to see and find out what happens.
Has the UFC offered you anything yet?
No, sir. I don't believe they have. I'm still waiting to hear from them. So hopefully I'll know pretty soon.
What's taking so long?
You know, I'm unsure, actually. I know they're always busy and they have all the fights coming up. I'm actually looking forward to seeing the fight this weekend with Tyron Woodley and Darren Till, so that's going to be cool.
Yeah.
And then, hopefully they get back to me soon, but I'll find out pretty quick, I imagine.
Do you feel like you have ties to the UFC? Like, basically, are you emotionally attached, or are you just looking to go where you feel like you're going to get the best deal? If it means that's going to Bellator, that's going to Bellator. You're just hoping to get the best deal possible. Is that accurate?
No, you know what? Obviously, like, for instance, Uriah Faber mentioned to me, he goes, Sage, what are you out there getting paid to fight for? I said to put butts in the seats. And he spoke to my dad about it, my family, and that's why I told him to put butts in the seats that are going to watch and to entertain the people that are watching, the fans. And he said, not only is it that, but it's also to take hits out there. So you have a very limited time. You never know how many hits you can take. Everybody's body is different, their brain, everything. So you're getting paid to go out there, and you don't know how long you can fight for. So you want to take the opportunity and be able to make as much as you can possibly in the amount of time you can. So, but that being said, I'm only 22 years old now, so I believe in my mind I could easily fight 10 more years till I'm 30-something and without injuries and feeling great, and I could see that for sure. But talk about being emotionally, I guess, tied to the UFC, I'm forever grateful to Dana White and the Fertittas who brought me in the UFC. And that is such a blessing. I'm so thankful to them, and also I think it's incredible that they let me develop as a fighter and start working my way up and learn as a fighter, because I'm the first person in history to come in off of high school and then start doing college and come right into the UFC just like that, right out of high school pretty much. So the first person in history to do that and be able to develop as a fighter and have the opportunity is massive. So I'm very grateful to them.
And so I'm wondering, has like a Bellator or ONE or any other organization extended an offer your way yet?
Well, you know what? I know my managers, I believe my managers are talking. I'm not sure if they're talking to the other organizations or what they're doing exactly, but I know they're taking care of it for me. So I guess we're going to find out what the deal is with that. And I talked to a few friends of mine talking about, like, what their pay is, for instance, in Bellator or ONE FC, and they were kind of giving me the rundown on it, and so I can kind of understand how everything works.
Do you feel like you're underpaid?
Well, I want to say underpaid. I know it's not the UFC or the sport of MMA isn't. Unfortunately, it's not about just talent, which I wish it was, about the hard work, the grind that you put in, how much effort, your talent, and how you perform out there. It's not just about all that, because you could be a top 10 guy, but maybe, I'm not sure what it is, maybe fans don't tune in and watch some of the top 10 guys or top 20 guys because maybe they've never even heard the person's name. I'm not sure what it is. Sometimes people walk into a room, something totally different, walk into a room and you can have five people walk in a room, but one person everybody gravitates to and they want to talk to. I'm not sure what that quality is or how that works, but the UFC is a business and any MMA fighting organization is a business. So unfortunately, it's not based on just talent, but also being able to, I guess, have people want to watch you fight and entertain them.
To the best of your knowledge, typically the UFC, if someone's about to become a free agent, they'll offer a deal before their last fight to ensure that you don't go out and test the waters. Do you know if that happened before your last fight in July?
What was that again? Sorry, the phone kind of cut out.
No problem. You know, historically, when there's a commodity that the UFC wants to still be in business with, they know that your contract is expiring. They'll offer you a deal before your last fight so that you don't go out and test the waters. They'll try to secure you. Do you know if that happened before your last fight in July?
You know what? I'm not sure if I did. Basically, my last fight in July happened last minute, pretty much. I'd been ready to fight and was told I was going to be put on one card, and then it got moved to another card, and then it moved to another card, but nothing was officially set yet. And then finally when they released I was going to fight and told me I had a fight scheduled against my opponent, Zach Otto, it was within like 2 weeks of actually having my fight. So I didn't really hear anything, actually. I'm not sure if my coaches did or whatnot, but I'll have to ask them that.
Okay, that's super interesting. And so is it possible that you go test the market, you're out there, free agent, and you're like, now you're a free man, you could go fight Logan Paul tomorrow, essentially, right? Is this why you're going out there and picking? Because you know that if you're in the UFC, you can't necessarily do this on your own, but you could go do what KSI and Logan Paul just did on your own. Is this where we're headed here, Sage?
Well, you know what? I'm not sure exactly where we're headed. I think if the fight me and Logan Paul did happen, I think any fighter in the UFC would love to fight a YouTuber. I don't see why they want it and be able to stand and make several million dollars, because the amount you're getting paid to have a fight like that and have fun out there doing it and be able to not only get to go have that fight, but get to get new fans, if that makes sense. So, for instance, like you said, Logan Paul has all the fans from YouTube and has, you said, 5 million followers on Twitter or whatever it is. Those are people that whether or not watch the MMA or not, now they're becoming a new fan of the sport. Not only the UFC, but MMA, whatever it is, fighting mixed martial arts, they're becoming fans of that because you're kind of mixing it together, blending two different, totally different aspects. YouTube and MMA is totally different, but you're blending it together, and now you have new fans, which is really cool.
Wow. Would you want to do this as an MMA fight or a boxing match?
Well, you know what? I'm really up for either one, actually. I think either one's pretty cool. I think either one would be fun too.
Wow!
You know, either one, in my opinion, either one's good for the sport. And like I said earlier, it takes a lot of courage to be able to get out there and have a fight. And I know Logan Paul just went out there and had a boxing fight. That takes a lot of courage to even step in a ring and do that. And that's amazing. And and also to be able to do that and have that fight, it's great for both of us. I know Logan Paul was saying that he wanted to fight for the UFC, and I think it's a great opportunity for both of us.
Wow, that would be amazing. The hair in that fight alone, the stare down, would just be phenomenal.
Right? Yes, sir.
I can't imagine a world where Sage Northcutt is on the UFC. I just feel like you are so closely linked. But this is, I mean, I give you a lot of credit for testing the waters here and trying to find out how much you are truly worth, because I think you're worth a lot. I think it's a somewhat courageous thing that you have done, and I give you a lot of props for that, Sage.
Thanks, Michelle Wani. Appreciate it.
When do you hope to get this all resolved?
You know what? I don't know if there's a certain amount of days until you have to hear back from the UFC or not, but I imagine it'd be pretty soon if I had to guess. So hopefully I hear something pretty soon and we get everything figured out. But I'd love to fight. I'd love to fight soon coming up. So hopefully I don't have to wait too long.
Have you had any conversations with Dana White himself about all of this, or are you leaving it up to your management?
No, you know what? I haven't. I'm sure he's busy, and I know the UFC just got bought by a new, I guess, management or new corporation. So that's really interesting. And Dana White, I'm sure, is plenty of stuff going on. So I'm kind of like letting my people that manage me and take care of that kind of stuff take care of it for me.
Nah, he always has time for you. He loves you. You're a product of his show. Like, you're the guy. Like, you put that show on the map. If it wasn't for you on that show would be nothing.
Man, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So I think you should just call him up if you want to. But I actually, you know what? I take that back. I think it's better to let your management deal with all of it. They're the ones who get paid for all this. Yeah, I think so.
Gotcha. Well, no matter what happens, I'm forever grateful to Dana White and also the Fertittas when I first came in the UFC, and all the time I've been able to fight for them so far. And if it's still in the future or if it's a different league, whatever it is, I'm forever grateful for them bringing me into the UFC and allowing me to fight for them. That is huge, and I'm so grateful for that, and also allow me to develop as a fighter. But I know a lot of people go, well, I want to see Sage fight a top 10 guy immediately, but you got to remember, I just turned 19 years old. I come in the UFC. I was also in college for the first year or so, year and a half in the UFC, and then now I'm finally training at camp for the past year at Uriah Faber's and working my way up. So I've had a lot of different things to develop, and I'm growing as a fighter and getting better.
Well, this is very exciting. I want to get to the bottom of this conversation between Uriah Faber and Logan Paul, so we're going to go call him right now. And thank you very much for the insight, Sage. I wish you the best with the contract talks, with securing this fight. Thank you, as always, for the time, and thank you for being so open about everything, and please keep us posted on how it all progresses. I wish you nothing but the best, my friend.
All right, you got it. All right, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Thanks
all right
for having me on the show.
There he is, the one and only Sage Northcutt stopping by. So here, for just 1 minute, we're going to go back to Uriah Faber and get the lowdown on his conversation between himself and Logan Paul about a potential fight against Sage Northcutt. And then we're going to get to Ally Quinta, and then we're going to say goodbye. But first, I need to talk to Uriah one more minute here. And, of course, we just spoke to him around 45 minutes ago. Uriah, are you there? Okay, not yet. I'm going to get him. That's what they're telling me. As they say in the news business, they are efforting. You get it? Efforting? Okay, Uriah, are you there? Uriah.
Ariel Helwani, I am here.
Long time no speak. Long time no speak.
The nose knows when there's news on the horizon.
Sniffing. So, we just spoke to you. And I must say, I'm sorry, we don't have a lot of time, but we just spoke for 20 minutes, so I don't feel too bad. But we were just talking to Sage Northcutt, and he told us that you had a conversation with Logan Paul about a potential fight between Sage Northcutt and Logan Paul. Please, tell us.
Logan Paul, we had an apartment in the same place, 1600 Vine, and he was a big-time wrestler when he was growing up. So he follows MMA. I think he might have been a state champ, competed in state a couple times. And so there was some back and forth banter with those guys, and I had actually talked to Logan Paul about coming to train MMA at our gym, and then a day later, him and Sage get into it on the internet, and so I had an initial conversation about him training here in MMA, and then 2 days later, I had to say, well, I guess not. Are you serious about fighting Sage? And he's not opposed to it. I mean, he does have a wrestling background. It seems like he's doing some boxing now, and he's a big, strong guy. So, I think there is some potential there. He does have that fight. He's going to do a rematch with
KSI?
With that guy.
I think that's breaking news.
And they're going to do that in America.
Thank you.
Huh?
I think that's breaking news. Thanks.
I don't know if that's breaking news. I'm not really up to date on whatever it is. But,
okay.
Sage is a free agent.
Right.
He can do whatever he wants. I mean, for the most part, the UFC hasn't made him an offer yet. And we've been asking, waiting.
Wow.
To hear, you know, what they want to do. But, there's some clauses in there where it'd be hard to match a no-holds-barred match with Logan Paul, you know.
Yeah, I bet.
And, I mean, and the truth is everybody wants to put Sage up against wrestlers. Logan Paul's a bigger guy than him, and he's a wrestler. So, I mean, there could be some intrigue there. Of course, Sage has been training professionally for a lot of years and would obviously be the favorite. But, you know, a guy like Logan Paul doesn't count himself out. He's got that growth mindset and believes in himself. They sold out 22,000 people in the big arena. So, anyways, it just so happened that I know Logan. We're kind of friends. And then that Sage and Logan got into a little back and forth banter, which was pretty funny on the internet. And, never say never.
Any promotions reaching out to you, not named the UFC, about Sage? I mean, I feel like most would want to be in business with him.
You know what? His dad is actually his manager.
Okay. Okay.
I just am a coach.
Okay.
And I help out somewhat. You know, I help out with the management, but his dad has final say on things. And as of reaching out, I'm not necessarily reaching out, but I'm sure there'd be interest. There's rules with the UFC about who you can and can't talk to about negotiating, but I would imagine that all organizations would have some interest in Sage. I mean, the sky's the limit with him. He's improving so fast. I mean, if you guys could see the improvements that are happening every day with him, it's unbelievable. He's such a fast learner. He's so positive. I've got him with Coach Kemp, who's an Olympic wrestling coach, and he's, you know, working on his stand-up daily. He's got all these sequences down that are proprietary sequences. And, I mean, he's incredible as a student, as an athlete, and as a fighter. So for people not to be, you know, clawing and scratching to get to him would be dumb. But we're not allowed to really talk about that until the UFC sends an offer. So we're going to see how that goes first.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again for coming on, Uriah. I just had to get to the bottom of this, and please let us know how we can help. I feel like the world needs to see Sage versus Logan. I'm just going to come out and say
it. Yeah, it's funny because I had talked to Logan about coming out here. I had a bunch of news guys from Sacramento call me because I guess Logan had said he wanted to fight Conor McGregor. And so then, you know, I know Logan, and so we were talking about him coming down here to actually train MMA, and he's like, yeah, I'll hit you back when I'm back from Paris. And he had just finished in Paris. And then 2 days later, him and Sage are talking to each other on the internet. And I'm like, oh, we'll scratch that. Now there's a little, I mean, I don't know if it's a real beef, but, they're at least talking about it, which is funny. Knowing Sage, you know.
Yes, yes. Okay, keep us posted, Uriah. Thank you for this insight.
All right.
You're the man.
Got it.
All right, there he is, Uriah Faber, making moves. And I know a lot of people are going to, roll their eyes. I know a lot of people are going to say, you know what? This sport started on freak shows. Go look at the old days of Pride and ask yourself why people like, you know, Mike Perry are talking about it, Sage Northcutt are talking about it. You may think that Sage Northcutt is overpaid. By the way, that's not the case. It's the other guys are underpaid. Ask yourself why they're clamoring for this fight against the non-MMA fighter. It's because of the fact that they are underpaid, and they look at the KSI fight and they say, wait a second, if I could figure this out, I could get paid that same kind of purse. That's why. And go look at the early days of Pride. Go look at some of the quote-unquote freak show fights. I mean, this sport, stop trying to pretend like we're all above all of this. We're not. That's why I had no problem with CM Punk. I had no problem with Brock Lesnar. And if you think for 1 second that Logan Paul is above the UFC, or I should say the UFC is above Logan Paul, you are mistaken. If you think for 1 second that they are above all of this, you are mistaken. They are not. And by the way, if you think that MMA is above this, you are sorely mistaken. They are not. All right, let's go to our last guest of the day. We always save the best for last here on the Helwani program. We talk now to Al Iaquinta, who's in the Big D, who's in Texas. Is that right, Al? Are you there?
Oh, what's up, Ariel?
How are you, sir? Where are you right now?
I just got into the hotel room.
Oh, my.
Relaxing. Aljo went downstairs to go sign the posters and stuff. I'm just relaxing a little bit, you know?
So this is a good time?
A good time to talk.
Yeah, yeah. I was worried. You know, I get very worried about the flights and the delays and if I'm bothering you. And I think I sent one text too many on Saturday because then you disappeared on me. I was very worried about the whole thing. No one knows what we're talking about except for me right now and you.
Yeah, it was Labor Day weekend. I meant to text you back.
No, that's cool. All right. Well,
we made it happen.
We made it happen. By the way, Logan Paul versus Sage Northcutt. You in or are you in?
I think I'm in on that.
I think I'm in too. Oh, you know? Man.
Sage's got to beat him up pretty good. He's a good wrestler, I heard, but I don't know.
You'd watch.
Oh, I'd watch.
Okay.
I didn't see I don't even know who is this KSI, so I don't really know. I'm not like, I don't know. It's all big news to me, this whole thing that they got going on with the YouTubers fighting each other.
It's a crazy world we live in, Al.
It is sick. What is going on? It's nuts.
So let's talk about you, because you were supposed to fight August 25th. We had you on the program. You needed a little more time. Health-wise, how are we feeling?
Feeling good, man. Feeling good. Back in the gym, been training hard now for a little bit. And just getting better, you know, getting better every day. And enjoying it. I don't have, like, a deadline or anything. Well, I kind of do. They offered me a Kevin Lee.
Yeah.
On December 12th.
15th.
So I said December 15th. Where is it? Milwaukee.
Yep, yep.
On Fox.
Yep.
Sick.
Yes.
So I said yes. So now it's in Kevin Lee's, the ball's in his court. He's got to say yes. He talked for like 2 years. He can't say no, you know? So I guess that'll probably be the fight.
So why does this interest you if you have a win over him?
Because he's right up there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of Kevin Lee.
Right.
So.
I think I have
I don't know. He had the same attitude when we fought the first time. He walked in like he was, you know, going to kick my ears, like, acting all... He thought his shit didn't stink. Now he's back on the same... You know, I think I humbled him for a little bit after that fight, and he kind of, like, was working hard and caught, but now his head's blown up again big, so I think it's right about time for, a little reality check.
So Lee was on MMA Junkie Radio late last week, and he said, quote, Al is too finicky. He's too back and forth. I ain't about to sign no contract with nobody that I don't think will show up or is going to give me a bunch of hassle. He wants to go back and forth on Twitter more than anything. And it's like, look, bro, I'm working. Don't effing bother me while I'm working. Quit effing tweeting me in SHIT. If you want me, then there are two or three people that you have to go through to get me. I make myself very hard to reach for a reason. There are things that I'm trying to do that are more long-term than what these guys are thinking about, end quote. What do you make of that? It sounds like he's not interested.
Finicky, I mean, I've never missed weight. When I show up at the weigh-ins, I'm on weight. So finicky, you know, who's finicky? That was a lot. He's got a lot of people to go through. What does that mean? Like, to get to the cage. I'm going to have to fight people before I fight, like, on the way to the, on talking, I got to, or is he talking about, like, his managers? I got to talk to them, or I don't get, I don't know. I don't know what he talks about. I don't know what, I don't know what to make of a lot. But he is, you know, the last part of that statement is probably the only thing that really matters. He's working hard. And he's gotten a lot better, you know. He's young, he's tough. Definitely tough. Barbosa freaking kicked him, you know. A lot of guys, he survived that. So, you know, he's tough. But the rest of that nonsense, finicky, freaking, he's like a 170 pounder that just can't, he's like scared to jump in the pool. So it just cuts weight a lot.
So it sounds like after the Gaethje fight, he was then angling for that fight. Are you concerned that now they're going to just do Gaethje versus Lee? Because it sounds like Gaethje is somewhat interested as well, because he was tweeting about him too. It feels like a little bit of a love triangle here between you three.
That's weird, but
not love per se, but a triangle, if you will, a fight triangle.
I know. Yeah. Whatever, man. I don't know. They offered me the fight, Kevin Lee, in Milwaukee. So I don't know what he's talking about now. I didn't hear much of it, but they offered me the fight. I said yes. I still haven't heard anything for sure, but Sean Shelby says that's the plan. So that's what I'm fighting, you know.
That's what you're preparing for?
Yeah.
Okay. To the best of your knowledge, do you know if he's behind the scenes accepted it and maybe just talking, you know, to create some buzz here in the public?
Somebody said they talked to his management, and his management said that he's in.
Oh, okay. All right.
So,
now, what about...
I think it's a dumb deal.
Can I ask you this? August 29th, you tweeted Justin Gaethje. Been thinking. I own a house in one of the wealthiest counties in the nation. You a hillbilly. You won one fight and a little money. In the big scheme of things, you could have made our fight happen and more money, but you kissed the peach. Where did this come from? I left out a part at the end there.
What was at the end?
You're the something.
Oh, yeah. He called me a pussy. Like, bro, listen. I'm not worried about what Justin Gaethje thinks. I'm freaking living in paradise right now. You're going to call me a pussy because you, like, dude, save it. We get it. You're on your high horse. You knocked out Vic. You're like, you're living large right now, okay, buddy? But guess what? In the big scheme of things, I'm doing all right. I'm not, no one thinks I'm a pussy. Trust me, you know? If anything, he's the fucking pussy. And I'm not talking about as far as, like, being tough. He's tough as nails, but just, like, you know. But he did it right. He did it his way. He made, you know, we're doing all good. We're all doing good. Everyone's doing good, you know. He made a lot of money doing it his way, and I'm doing it my way. So it's fine.
What do you mean by kiss the peach?
He kisses there. He freaking, I don't know. He could have made that fight happen.
Yeah.
If he was on the fighter's side, I don't know how to explain it without really explaining it, but he could have made the fight. The fight could have happened.
The one against you?
Yeah.
On August 25th or at a later date?
I don't know. I don't know what the plan would have been, but it could have been worked out one way or the other. But he just took the fight against Vic, you know. And Vic had to take the fight. Vic, you know, said he was hoping to get a big win and get, you know, then he was going to get the payday after the big win. But it kind of works out backwards when you, you know, go like that.
Sure.
He could have fought a 3-round fight against a guy that's not ranked and got paid the same. But he had to take this fight to try to get to the next level, right? So I think he got a little underpaid for this fight, being a main event,
And now he's... I don't know. I don't want to get knocked out like that for anything less than what I deserve.
Right.
You know? Not that I would get, not just, I don't want the chance of that happening, because it can happen to anybody. It happened to Gaethje the last fight, you know, it happened to Vic this fight, it could happen to anybody, but I'm not about to put myself out there for something less than I, especially if I just came off a big fight where I took a lot of damage. I'm just gonna jump in there and basically take a pay cut. Because they were offering him he earned the spot to be in that fight, so they weren't doing him any favors.
It's interesting to hear him say that you're finicky, because Kevin Lee, that is, because like you told me recently, you wanted the Ferguson fight. I know that you were somewhat interested in Pettis. Now Kevin Lee. Gaethje, you just said that you were interested if things would have been worked out. You want to get back in there. You want to fight by the end of the year, correct?
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm fighting. I think it's Sean Shelby said December 15th in Milwaukee. They want to get behind me. They want to show me that, you know, they really want to push me and do the right thing. So I said, I'm in, Kevin Lee, December 15th. Let's go. So that's the plan.
And what a great vote of confidence. This would be the headliner?
Yeah.
You would headline the last ever UFC on Fox show. I mean, that is
on Fox.
Beautiful, right?
That would be great. It would be great. It's, I think I've earned it.
I think so, you too. Know? Are you going to go to 229 to get a good look at those two guys? Conor, Khabib, you got Ferguson, Pettis. I mean, that's a lightweight little tournament there. Are you going to go?
No, not big. Not. I'm going to try to go to the one at MSG in November. You know, Chris is fighting, and Frivola. We got Frivola's fighting. How about Aljamain Sterling fighting this weekend?
Yes.
We got Dennis Bazooka is another guy from our gym who's he's making his pro debut in the Bellator card in Nassau Coliseum. I'm looking forward to that. He's the guy that I've been training a lot. He's a lot of talent. You got some good. We got a lot of good young upcoming guys that I'm excited about. Aljo on Saturday, sick.
You'll be cornering him.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. I'll be in his corner.
How's he doing?
Absolutely. He's doing good. He's looking like an absolute savage.
Really?
Yeah. The guy for 135 pounds, you look at him, I mean, he's shredded and, you know, but he's not like really, you wouldn't think he's twice as strong as you would. By looking at him, you look at him, you're like, oh, that guy looks pretty strong. Then he grabs a hold of you, like, holy shit. Grip strength. He's been grinding, man. He's been working hard for a long time and it's paying off. So I'm looking forward to him going out there and having some fun this weekend.
Yeah, one of the more intriguing fights on the card. He's fighting Cody Stamann, who is 17-1, hasn't lost in the UFC. He hasn't lost in over 4 years. I think he's like 10-0 in his last 10 fights. How do you beat him? Have you looked at tape on this guy?
Well, I think Aljo, you know, Aljo's got his game. And every fight he's getting more and more comfortable using all this, you know, his legs do some crazy. He's got some kicks that are out of this world. His hands. He's just doing everything right. You know, he's all in, and I think every fight he's getting more and more comfortable. He's letting his hands go. He's mixing in the takedowns better, and on the ground he's just a freak. He does things that he gets guys back from the weirdest positions, and he's on there. And once he's on your back, it's not fun.
Who do you think wins, Ferguson or Pettis?
I don't know. All these fights, I have no idea. Conor and Khabib.
You don't know? You don't have a pick?
I don't know. Obviously, I want Khabib to kill him in the first round and make me look good. But I don't know. I think that Conor is going to surprise people on the ground, and I think Khabib is going to surprise people standing up. I don't think it's like everyone's like, oh, Conor's going to hit him with one shot. If he can't, it's like a throwback UFC one, like ground versus stand up guy in everyone's opinion. But I think it's a little, I think it's way more evenly matched in all facets of the fight. But now that I said that, who knows? Conor will probably knock him out one shot. I don't know.
Al, before
the guys,
go ahead.
Conor's got that like X factor, you know.
Yeah.
But I guess Khabib does too. He's just, I don't know. I think maybe I gave some people hope after the last fight. You know, I think before that fight, everyone was like, "Oh, Khabib is just going to run through everybody." Now there's like a little bit of a glimmer of hope, and Conor, I think that's all he needs to really get in his groove, you know.
Before I let you go, Cajun Johnson was on the show last week, and he said essentially that there's no momentum behind Project Spearhead. Do you feel the same way at this point? Is there nothing really going on?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything. I think it's I don't know what the plan is.
But no momentum would be accurate.
I'd say it's probably about accurate.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you doing this, Al. Thank you very much for checking in. Best of luck to Aljamain this weekend. Huge fight for him against Cody Stamann. I hope to see you out there in the Big D.
You're coming out?
Yes.
I'll see you out here, man.
All right. Thanks for doing this. Thank you, Al. All the best to you guys. There he is, Aljamain Sterling, fighting this weekend against Cody Stamann. His good friend, Ally Quinta, will be in his corner, kind enough to stop by and join us via the hotel room in beautiful Dallas, Texas. You can hit my music before I say goodbye here, and want to let everyone know that the post show is coming up. We'll have that again like last week on YouTube, iTunes, its own little feed there. In our feed, it'll be its own little file. New York Rick and I are going to talk about UFC 228, the betting lines and whatnot. We'll talk about Patty Pimblett losing. We'll talk about Pearl Gonzalez getting back on track. Maybe a little PFL. Maybe a little All In. There's still a lot more to discuss. BJ Penn coming back. JDS versus Tai Tuivasa. What else is going on? All kinds of things. UFC 229 and the crazy lines for UFC 228. So that's on the post-fight show, or I should call it the post-show, Ariel Helwani's MMA post-show. And again, you can get that on iTunes and YouTube and all those places afterwards. But that will do it for the live portion of today's program. If you missed Skype, we'll get it back next week, hopefully. There were some Skype issues today, and we didn't want to ruin everyone's day with poor audio or poor video. So we thought, you know what, let's make the executive decision and just go with phone only today. But a good show. Thank you to all who tuned in. Thank you to all who stopped by. Thank you very much to all our guests today. Thank you very much to the great Oscar De La Hoya. Thank you to James Vick. Thank you to Mike Perry, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Whitman, Uriah Faber twice. Thank you very much to Kamaru Usman, Sage Northcutt, and Ally Quinta. Back next week on Monday, same time and place. Until I say peace, I'm out of here.